a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
He's got the football, and he walks in. And the Utes razor sharp with the opening possession. They've got 61 yards. The backfield. Utes rush four. Brown straight back. And it's picked off. It's Lloyd headed for the end zone. Pick six. Devin Lloyd. Rising on third and long, right down the middle, a seam shot caught, and down to the 10 is Dalton Kincaid.
Alrighty, sports fans, welcome on in. It is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell here, along with Tom Hackett, former Utah great punter, and of course, KSL Sports contributor. He's filling in for Alex Keery, who decided that he heard that there were snowstorms this week and wanted to still find warm weather. So he's taking a few days to try to suntan that beautiful white body of his. Anyways, welcome to the program, Tom.
Thank you, Scotty. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. All right. Well, as you can tell by those highlights, very good, by the way, Jeremy, something big happened this weekend.
A few things big happened.
There was a lot of big things that happened, and but I'm not sure that there was any bigger than what happened there up on the hill for the Utes. And, of course, I had the pleasure of being at the game, and it was just amazing. It was electric. We're going to talk about the Utes in the Rose Bowl playing the Ohio State Buckeyes. That's the cut.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, Tom. I have a surprise for you.
I like surprises.
I have a surprise. I have something that I have been holding on to. And since July.
Wow.
And I no one knows that it's there. This is the first time it's been exposed.
Okay.
I just want you to know that I had a lot of influence on what happened with the Utah football team this year.
Okay.
Let's call it a good luck charm. I believe in that stuff. I believe in that karma. I believe in it. So I'm going to show you. Okay. So
you're going to show me?
Yeah, of course I am. Because now I can.
You're exposing yourself?
Well, not
on
myself.
Radio?
No. Well, that would certainly put the Utes in the Rose Bowl if I did that. But that's unfair. We'll just leave it at that. All right. We went to Pac-12 Media Days.
Yes, you did.
And it was in July. And I got a little something, and I just said, I'm going to put it in here, and I'm going to show it to you, and I want you to read it for the folks at home. Okay. So I got this. Now, you can't see this at home, but it's like one of those
notebook.
Moleskin books, you know, with the little band, right? on it. Yeah, it's like a journal. You take notes and what have you. And on the cover of it is what?
A rose.
For the Rose Bowl. So this is what the Pac-12 gives you at Pac-12 Media Days. So it's like a little notebook type of thing.
The rose is off-centered, though. It's very strange.
Yeah, don't look at it that way, okay? Sorry. Right. And this has been an off-centered year here. I want you to open the book and tell me what you see in the front page of this book.
Front page of the book. All right, I'm opening the book. Utah. This is dated 7/27/21.
Yes.
Which would have been August 27th. Utah will win the Pac-12.
July.
Sorry, July. Utah will win.
I mean, you're from Australia. It could be August.
August is actually the seventh month in Australia. That's for another time. Utah will win the Pac-12 and go to the Rose Bowl. Nothing else is written on the page.
That's all that needs to be there.
So what were you thinking when they were 1-2?
I didn't think about it. I just left it there. I didn't touch it. I did. It's been literally in my backpack, untouched, since July. And I have waited. I almost showed this last week. Anyway, so Utah has this amazing weekend, and it was really. I mean, it was incredible.
Well, you were there. Can we start with that? Like, what was Allegiant Stadium like?
My goodness.
Because I wasn't fortunate enough to make the trip.
I drove down there, and I left Thursday night after our show. Drove down to the game, and it's, you know, it's like 9 o'clock at night, and the freeway's packed with people.
You left Salt Lake City at 9 p.m.
Yeah, well, I left at 6:15 from downtown Salt Lake, and I headed south.
Okay,
and it takes you roughly. It took me 5 hours and 40 minutes ish to get to Las Vegas. That's what I'm telling you. It took me. It's a lot faster than that, but we won't get into that. I will just say, so you're going at night, right? It's a Thursday night.
There shouldn't be anyone.
There's
on the
no
road.
Traffic.
No.
There was traffic the whole entire way.
And you would have seen a lot of Utah flags, I'm sure.
Saw the flags and what have you. So I get there, and we want to go to the game early. So I'm normally at the game early anyways. So I show up in the stadium. We're down on the field. We get to take some pictures. The field's amazing. The stadium is just – it's just incredible. The Mandalay Bay is right across the freeway. So there's a bridge that walks across I-15 from the Mandalay Bay to Allegiant Stadium. So we take the bridge over, see a few fans, but we're really early, way early. I get up in the radio booth, and then you just slowly start seeing
– sea of red.
You just start seeing people just show up. And then we start getting social media posts from people, and it's just a steady stream – of red going across the bridge.
Utah fans showed up.
I think there was somewhere in the 56-ish thousand people in a 65,000 seat stadium, and 45,000 of them had to be Utah fans.
It's unbelievable.
It was incredible. So the environment.
You and I, by the way, had both been to the two previous Pac-12 title games in Santa Clara, and with all due respect to Northern California. This didn't even compare.
Major dud.
Yeah,
both of them. Aside from that, Utah lost. Right. Just a major dud.
The atmosphere at those games was pretty poor.
It was.
It says it lightly too.
And you have people, so they go, well, okay, which game should I go to? Should I go to a Pac-12 championship game, or should I wait and hope that they go to the Rose Bowl? And I think that's kind of been the debate, but Las Vegas is so easy to get to.
Yeah.
It really is. And it was just – it was so impressive. Just that alone, it was so impressive to see the Ute faithful show up, right? So the game starts, and I've never experienced this. Like I did as a player. I kid you not, I have goosebumps. From the kickoff, I have goosebumps. And I'm standing up in the booth. I can't sit down and I'm standing in the booth. Bill Riley's there. We're both standing up in the booth, and you know it's a comfortable, beautiful, brand new stadium. And it was just Utah's year, you know. And you don't want to say it. You don't want to go. Oh, we're going to go to the Rose Bowl. Like we're going to go to the Rose Bowl because you don't want to jinx it. But I'm telling you, every single first down, every touchdown, every sack, every tackle that Utah made, I'm just like in my head going, I'm going to go to the Rose Bowl. Utah is going to the Rose Bowl. I can't I could even today, Tom.
You can't believe it.
I can't get over it.
The granddaddy of them all, Scotty.
And it absolutely is. I mean, it is the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl from Pasadena, California. And it's indescribable even now. And part of it for me, and you were at Utah, a different era than me. There was not a snowball's chance. Like a snowball's chance that Utah was going to go to the Rose Bowl or a bowl when I was at Utah. any bowl. And to see this happen and to watch it unfold in front of my eyes, and I mean not just that game, but to see the whole entire season. Like I watched last year, the COVID year, and this was a young team. Right, and they were really young, and I watched them, and I said, boy, this team could be really good. Like, it could be really good. I mean, it's a quarterback away from being really good, and they've got amazing talent on defense. I mean, they're all young. So last year I was like, great, they're going to get 5-7 games in the COVID season. All these young players are going to get experience, and they're going to come back like gangbusters next year.
Well, there's a lot to unpack with this season. It was a 1-2 start, a quarterback change, a few other pieces kind of thrown around. Cole Bishop on the defensive side, the tragic passing of a teammate played some role in all of this as well. But to think about where they were a couple of months ago to where they are now, it's almost unbelievable, and it's like some sort of a miracle in some regard, because it doesn't make any sense. If you remember that Utah BYU game,
and the San Diego State game, the San Diego State game,
shambles,
Tom, was the most boring game I've ever witnessed in my life.
It was just constant catastrophe.
It was pathetic. There was no energy. There was no excitement with this team. There was no leadership with this team. There was no direction. I mean, nothing. This team was just atrocious.
But that's what I'm getting. And to think, however many months down the road, 2-3 months down the road, they've gone in 3 weeks, they've beaten a top 10 team 38-7 and 38-10. It's hard to beat a team once. It's incredibly difficult to beat a team twice. And they did it against a top 10 opponent. And it was like a massacre. It wasn't close. Neither of the games were close, Scotty.
What surprised me about Oregon was Mario Cristobal has this like mantra, right? That we're going to out-physical you. We're going to be tough in the trenches,
right,
on both sides of the ball. And that's kind of their thing. And then they have athletes, right? They have athletes at skill positions, and they got athletes on that defense. I mean, just an incredible defense. But there was something not right with this team. And we've had these players clubs where we've had these shows once a week. So we had Devin Kafusi come on,
right?
And he just said, "We'll know early on against Oregon if they're for real or not, because the first time we played them, they were actually kind of soft."
That's interesting.
And it's like and we even talked about it. And I talked about it on the radio. It just felt like there's something not right with Oregon. It felt like there's a distraction. It felt like there wasn't the same kind of, I don't know, style of play. They laid down quickly. Like you punched them in the mouth, and they just really didn't fight back.
But they didn't have a quarterback either.
No.
And that was exposed as the season went on.
So you know how you talk about, it's really hard to beat a team? Like watching the first game, watching Anthony Brown, I'm like, I know exactly how to play this guy, and it's the style of offense that Oregon runs. So it's the play action, it's play action, and then every throw is quick hitting. And when he gets in that rhythm, then he's really good.
Right.
And you watch the Oregon State game between the first Utah game and the second game. That's what he did. They just let him do it. And Utah actually made some just brilliant adjustments from game one to game two. And they're very subtle. It wasn't a lot. But what it was showing some blitz looks, because that's where he hurt Utah in the first game was was actually blitzing. When Utah, they just came after it. And he could just catch the ball, plant, boom, and get rid of the ball quickly. And he didn't have the pressure. He didn't have to sit in the pocket. He didn't have to do that. And this game, they just sat back. They literally just sat back in zones. And he could, or they faked and they showed him something, and then they rolled to a different coverage, and he was at a loss.
He was horrible. He was throwing balls 10 feet over his receiver's head. Like he wasn't even, receivers weren't even jumping for him. They were that far out reach.
And then what you have is you have a guy who actually should make a play for you, you know, in the third quarter where they threw the ball down on the goal line, and the guy just dropped it. But that's kind of what happens after a while. You kind of lose your mindset, your focus, whatever.
When it rains, it pours.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and you can just – I mean, I think Utah beat Oregon when Devin Lloyd intercepted that pass and scored. It was just like Covey's punt return.
Yeah.
And in the first game, it was like the game was over. And I really believe the game was over the minute Devin Lloyd had a pick six. And you could just see that there was just nothing in Oregon. And a lot of it, you have the offensive coordinator who's going to Akron to be a head coach, and now Mario Cristobal, who's going to Miami and going back home and going back.
Not official, but.
Well, it's going to happen.
A lot of speculation. Yeah.
And so you've got a situation where there's a massive distraction. Massive distraction.
So you believe that had that played a big role in all of this?
I believe it had an impact, right? Where Utah has been impressive to me, and this shifted because it wasn't there at the beginning of the year. I'm telling you, it wasn't even close to there at the beginning of the year. Where this all shifted for Utah was when this offense and defensive line for both these teams just matured, it grew up. It just morphed. It changed. Junior Tafuna playing in the inside, and Utah lost. You know, they lost a player early on in the season, a defensive lineman, and the emergence of Van Fillinger. I mean, Van Fillinger has become a man, and he is. You can see why this guy was 4-star. I mean, he is really, really a legitimate player. And then you got Mika Tafua on the other side, and so. What was happening is you started getting pressure on teams where it was consistent. You know, it wasn't just one guy on the edge. It was both guys on the edge and a great push in the middle. And that's like, you know, if you're a defensive coach, that's nirvana, right? You're just happy about that. And it's just a nightmare for an offense. So that developed. Utah's ability to stop the run developed. And a lot of that was with the emergence of Cole Bishop, and he was injured, and he came back. And then this offensive line they really liked it from the beginning, but they just couldn't get the five guys healthy enough to stay together. And Bama Lasini just kind of grew up, and I mean, he came out of nowhere. And this team just really, really emerged. But the thing about this entire year, for me, for Utah, it's really one thing, and that is the offense led the way.
That must make you pretty happy.
I don't sleep at night. I get so happy about that, Tom. Well, it's always been a bugaboo of me.
Well, I get it. It's been a decade since Utah's had an offense that's led the way.
And I see that in the offensive meeting room or the team room where it's like the mission statement. And it's like we play great defense, we play great special teams, and we take care of the football on offense. It doesn't say we play great offense. And so special teams wasn't great this year.
No.
Defense was a work in progress. And offense, consistently, once Cam Rising got in the game, was the difference.
I'm not gonna disagree with you. I think wholeheartedly – as good as this team is on paper, and I think this is a very good Utah football team, good enough, in fact, they go into the Rose Bowl to play the Buckeyes. On paper, you knew going into this year they were always going to be dominant. But there's something else that I don't think words will ever be able to describe. I don't think there's anything we can say on the radio to give fans an understanding of what it is. I don't even know if the players or the coaches know what was going on inside that facility, but there's some spirit, there's some sense of belief. You combine that with confidence and momentum. And all of a sudden, you've created this monster that's incredibly difficult to stop, as Utah showed towards the back. Cam Rising lost one game of football against an Oregon State team that ran essentially three offensive plays that Utah couldn't stop.
And it's all Power 5 teams, too.
And it's all Power 5. I mean, like, so there's something going on there, and there's this constant conversation between talent or fit. And I think Charlie Brewer, they decided to opt and go with Charlie Brewer based on experience. And I know Kyle Whittingham's going to defend himself, and as he should, but I think in hindsight, and I get that hindsight's 20/20, you've got to look back and go, there's something to learn from all of this. And that is that maybe experience isn't as valuable as fit. Maybe the player that the team rallies around is more important than however many games Charlie Brewer played in the SEC and threw for 500 yards against Clemson. It clearly had a profound impact on the way this football team played. Clearly.
Charlie Brewer or Cam Rising was the difference. I mean, people are, and I totally agree. And I agree with the whole, everything's always about fit. Cam Rising's the best dual threat quarterback in the Pac-12. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, this guy legitimately can run and ran and made a huge deal. I can't tell you how many third downs and like medium to long that Cam Rising scrambled and got a first down and what kind of impact that had on this team. And then his ability to make throws, and he made some clutch throws. I mean, USC throwing a third down pass to Theo Howard really kind of changed the whole momentum of that game. And this guy is that legitimate dual threat guy. But he's this spark plug. He fits in with how Andy Ludwig was, you know, dialing things up. It's the absolute perfect fit. But it's also what you're saying about this guy is just a spark plug. And you talk about everyone around him just raves about the type of person he is and how he goes. He's like a guy who's just never had a bad day.
He's always smiling.
Just has a great attitude, a great perspective on everything, and so yeah. I mean, it has a huge impact. All right, I want to ask you something. You grew up in Australia, right? And
yep.
You weren't really exposed to American football until you came to the University of Utah,
right?
Did the Rose Bowl ever mean anything to you? Like, did you understand it when you were a player at Utah, or did you understand it before? What does a Rose Bowl mean to you?
Well, I understood the importance of trying to get to the Rose Bowl. It didn't hit me to my core. It never made me want to cry thinking about, I mean, to be fair, if I always told myself, if we make it to the Rose Bowl, the coolest thing that's going to come out of that is that I'm probably going to go get a rose tattoo somewhere.
When you say somewhere, do you mean like you're going to get a rose tattoo like at a tattoo place as somewhere, or you're going to get a rose tattooed on you somewhere?
Yeah, on me somewhere. I just didn't decide where I was going to get it. But I was excited about the rose tattoo because then it had meaning.
Did you ever
right?
think about where you might want to get the rose?
No, not really. We never
really got that far?
We were close, and then we just tailed off pretty drastically.
Do you think that players, when you played,
yeah, I do.
Do you
I
think
do.
They really thought that they could go to the Rose Bowl, or do you think they belonged at the Rose Bowl?
No, I don't.
It was just
I was never a part of a team, Scotty, where I felt like we. Even when we were number two in the country, I think it was 2014
beat
or
Michigan
15.
Michigan early in the year, right?
Early in the year, we beat Michigan. Then we went to Oregon. We dismantled the Ducks, 62-18 or whatever. I never really felt like we belonged there. I thought the team felt like we were lucky and fortunate to be there and to embrace every moment. But do we really belong? And then it showed. We went to USC, right? We had a bye week after the Ducks. We went to USC, and the Trojans were favored by 3 points. And we were the number two team in the country. And I'm going, if we're not going to beat the Trojans in the Coliseum now, I don't know when it's going to happen. Because if we're not favored, if they're favored by 3 points, that has to piss everybody off in that locker room, and we lost. We lost. It wasn't even close.
You're up early, though, right? And then Travis threw like...
Big bulldog threw three picks to that middle linebacker. I forget his name.
Yeah, no, I know who...
That Trojan maroon or whatever color kind of just turned into red for Travis that game. It was unfortunate.
See, I just... this whole weekend, I can't get over. I just can't get over the fact that Utah is going to the Rose Bowl.
But I think Utah knows they belong.
Now they do, yes.
No, but I feel like they've known that for the last month at least.
Do you – so we broadcast to the two previous Pac-12 championships, right. And it never felt like – they just didn't
– 2019, I thought maybe, but they came out in that game and they were off.
Yep.
They were not right. Something was wrong.
And I really think it's part of that just mindset. I think the mindset changed. And you know what I think happens when the mindset changed? I think it brings people to you.
Without a doubt. The power of the brain, the power of confidence is, you cannot put words to describe it. Now, here's what's special. It's really hard. And you know this, Scotty, better than most. It is incredibly hard for any athlete in any sport to gain confidence. It's hard. You've got to be built different. You've got to go through experiences that are tough. It's so challenging to find 120 of the same build to have that same mindset. It's easy to find, or it's easier, I should say, to find one or two players here or there that know they belong, but to find 60, 70, 90 players, I mean, come on. That's where special is built, and that's why I think this Utah team's different than the rest.
Oh, man, so much to talk about. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, though, I guess we're going to talk to Gordy Chiesa, a little Jazz tack. You're listening to Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back to Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell and filling in for Alex Keery is, of course, Tom Hackett, KSL sports insider, former Ute punter, great. Welcome back to the show. I gotta mention this to you before we get to Coach Gordy Chiesa, Tom. If you're going to go to the Rose Bowl, because let me just, if you've been under a rock, And you're listening for the first time out there in listening land, people. Utah, the University of Utah, it's giving me chills right now just thinking about it. I'm getting emotional, is going to play in the Rose Bowl. And if you're going to go play in the Rose Bowl, there's no better opponent than the Ohio State Buckeyes, right? I mean, maybe Michigan, but definitely Ohio State.
Without a I would favor Ohio State over Michigan, because Utah played Michigan a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They've done that. It's time for the Buckeyes to get a little Utah football treatment, in my opinion.
Would you like a little history lesson really quick?
Sure.
Okay. Utah's only played Ohio State one other time. 1986.
Okay.
Guess who was there? That would be me. We lost 64-6. I was at the game. And I'm going to tell you, I was redshirting, but they let me travel with the team. We were starstruck. They put it on us.
And this was in Columbus?
Oh, yeah. It was in the Horseshoe. I mean, it was like, I was like, man, I remember, because I come from a small town in Utah, and here I am. It's like the big, you know, it was this iconic stadium. Anyways. All right. Hey, we got to get to Coach Gordy Chiesa here, which is presented by Divvy, the modern financial platform for business. See how you can spend smarter at GetDivvy.com. All right, Coach, we hope you're there out in Never Never Land. Welcome to the program. How you doing?
Thanks, Scott. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
G'day, Coach. Well, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Where are you, Gordy?
I'm in Salt Lake City as you speak right now. I've been traveling a lot recently, but I'm back in Salt Lake, and it's been good.
So you did you know that Utah won? Utah meaning the University of Utah, because there's the Utah Jazz and then there's the Utah Utes. Did you know they won the Pac-12 and they're going to the Rose Bowl?
Oh, very much. I'm excited. I'm a big Utes fan for many men since 1989, since you played, as a matter of fact.
Ah!
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I know the coaches, literally for the last 30-something years. So I'm a believer, and it's It's great. There's a lot of adversity this year, and the Utes, you know, again, it sounds so cliche, but they played as a unit, and that adversity brought them together as one, and they performed, and they got better each week. And that's a sign of superior coaching and really wonderful playing, where the guys took it serious and got better, and they played to their potential versus playing either up or down versus who you play against. It's a huge factor, whether it's Pac-12 football or whether it's the NBA basketball.
Yeah, isn't it a beautiful thing when you have the talent and the coaches put a plan together and you execute the plan and you win? It really is. It's a beautiful thing. So the Jazz are on this. They've got this. I guess what is it? 4-game road swing here. They won a really unusual game at Cleveland. They were up by 15. They lose the lead late, and then they win a close game. As a coach, how do you manage like a road game like this? What is kind of your focus, and how do you keep the team on an even keel in this situation?
Well, Scott, the game yesterday, the Jazz were up 15 in the fourth quarter, and then they had those costly turnovers. And that gave the life to the young, talented, up-and-coming Cleveland Cavaliers. And then suddenly they got in transition off steals and were making rainbow threes in a 15-0 spurt. So as a coach, what you want to try to do, even with a veteran team, you want to go back to fundamentals and calm down the group and respect the possession. And if you're going to miss a shot, that's one thing. But when you have live ball turnovers, that gives the opponent. So yesterday in the game, Scott and Tom, they had 12 steals, the Cavaliers. And the Jazz have 17 turnovers. And that was a huge factor when the Jazz were outscored in the fourth quarter, 26-18. However, quickly, that Donovan Mitchell rose to the occasion, certainly, and that Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert was absolutely sensational the last 5 minutes of the game, both offense and defense.
Going back to your coaching days, obviously, it's a long NBA season. It always has been. But we're 23-odd games into this thing now. Is this around the time coaches and fans start to gain confidence in knowing what this team's all about? Is this about the time?
Yeah, very much. Time's right now. So Jazz stand at 16-7. They won 4 in a row. They're 8-10 the last 10 games. That's the metrics. But as far as the visual and the vibe of the team right now is they're absolutely playing better. So the fans see it, and more importantly, the team that sees it right now. The greatest as far as improvement for the Jazz for the last, say, 3 weeks, just for the narrative, is their three-point shooting. To start this season, they were absolutely misfiring, and now, right now, they're first in the NBA in most made threes per game at 15.6, and they're absolutely trending up. And now, also, they're sixth in the NBA, which at 36.9. And, Tom, they used to be like 24 about 3 weeks ago as far as overall shooting, so as far as three-point range. So the Jazz have shot much better. And then the question is why, how? Very simply, is that there's better ball movement and there's less dribbling. Scott, all I know is this. Like any sport, when the ball moves, the scoreboard moves. When the ball sticks, the scoreboard sticks. And it sounds so elementary, but it's absolutely crucial as far as an NBA basketball.
I'm telling you, the greatest coaches I was coached by and the greatest players that I watched play, the game was simple. And I get this. And a lot of people make it a lot harder than it actually is. So you made a comment a minute ago, and I'm curious about this because it clearly feels like Donovan Mitchell is really starting to round into shape here, and his game is really kind of getting to where I think we thought it would be. As a coach, when do the players take over? You know, because I hear Coach Whittingham talk about this, and he said, you know, when the players kind of take ownership in the program and they start leading, and it's almost as if the coach does less. How does this happen, and when does it happen? Because I would imagine that Donovan Mitchell's kind of one of those guys where he just says, all right, I got this. I got it. I'm going to take care of it, and I'm going to just take over a game.
Very much. So that's the trust factor. You described there is that there's an evolution of the trust transfer between the coaching staff to the players and to and next level to the elite players, star players. So in practice, the coaches are number one, where they dominate practice as far as the teaching drills. Then it flip-flops in a game where the coaches are a distant second, even though there's preparation before, to say the least, but the players take over the game. So when Jazz basketball, Utah football, as far as situation, there was that transfer of trust, and it's invisible, but you get the, you feel it all the time. And that's Donovan Mitchell, and that's Mike Conley. So, Tom, right now, with Mike Conley, he's the guy that, in Jazz basketball, has played very well. He's first in the NBA in three-point shooting at 47.5. And that, so I mentioned about the Jazz three-point shooting as far as upticking. He's a huge factor in that. So the Jazz coaches, they trust the backcourt of Donovan Mitchell, who's an elite talent, and the steadiness of Mike Conley, that's a proven ball handler, decision maker, and now he's a knockdown shooter. And then there's always Rudy Gobert as far as his all-around brilliance. He's first in the NBA in rebounding. He's second in the NBA in shot blocks. And you get the feeling that he's a nasty guy, too, in a great way.
Over the last couple of years, the Jazz have obviously been really formidable in the Western Conference, Coach. They've, you know, been one of the better teams throughout the regular season. In the playoffs, they've been good as well. But I think, you know, for Jazz fans out there, and I'm looking big picture now, Coach, when the Jazz do make the playoffs this year, they're going to have to deal with small lineups. It's been kind of their nemesis over the last couple of years, teams going small on them. And with Rudy Gobert and some bigger centers, they have had a hard time defending. How is that, and why is that going to change this year?
Well, they added Rudy Gay to the mix right now, so they could go ultra small, where instead of playing Whiteside for 15 minutes a game, and in place of Rudy, Rudy's in foul trouble, which happens often in playoff games. It's an amazing phenomenon. In playoff games, there's always foul trouble because you're taking pride in your defense and the ability to stop the rival players that are talented. So Rudy Gay is a huge factor in that mix as far as they can go small ball and play Rudy at five, and he's a knockdown three-point shooter as both seasonally but also career-wise. He's shooting right now from three-point range 47.8. So the difference now is less Whiteside could be, and Rudy Gay as far as in the small ball. Plus also, 1 year later, Tom, there's the experience of doing it. Last year, the Jazz were shell-shocked, even though the coaches talked about it. On the court, they were slow as far as reacting to it. You're talking about the Clippers, where they knocked them out four straight after being up 2-0 in the Jazz. But now, 1 year later, they're absolutely more experienced. And when it does happen, which will be a task at them, they'll be more ready for it mentally, physically, and spiritually.
Wow, even spiritually, I like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. No, Craig, excuse me, what's happening right now, Scott, is that there's definitely a higher being in this whole thing as far as, hey, you played in many games where you threw the pass to the wrong guy, and guess what? The guy still caught it. Right. It happens. I mean, it's just like an NBA basketball where you do a lot of things right and suddenly the shots miss. You do a lot of things wrong. Guess what? The shot goes in. How do you figure it out? I have no idea. It's called Murphy's Law. Or is it Tom Hackett's Law?
Maybe
it's Tom Hackett's Law.
Yeah,
maybe.
It could be. There's maybe. No explanation to it. Other, you know, science can't explain it, so it's got to be spiritual.
No, I know I'm kidding, but I'm not.
No, I'm with you.
It's way beyond just playing, especially in playoff games. In playoff games, the intensity is incredible. That's why these young fellas come to the NFL, to the NBA, even though they're talented and they're absolutely athletic and they look great, but it's that mental focus and the tenacity you need to play through physicality. And by the way, the other guys are good you play against, especially in playoff games.
All right, Coach, you got a list for us. Let's hear it.
This list today, Scott, is in honor of Rudy Gobert. When I was watching the game yesterday, and that was really a hard-fought game, the Jazz hung tough to win, was that there was there was two guys in the top 10 that were leading the NBA in shot blocking. So I made a mini list right now. This is the total block shot leaders just this season, the total blocks, the top 10. So I'm keeping it a quick list. Number 10, New York Knicks, Mitchell Robinson blocked 34 shots. Number 9, from the Boston Celtics, Al Horford, blocked 35. From the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis Antetokounmpo has blocked 36 shots. Now, the guy played yesterday, young major talent, age 20 years old, a former from USC, Evan Mobley from Cavaliers, has blocked 38 shots. Number 6, Jazz play against him on Wednesday. Daniel Gafford has blocked 40 shots this Saturday from the Washington Wizards. Number 5, for the Memphis Grizzlies, Jaren Jackson Jr. has blocked 46 shots. I tie for number 3, Anthony Davis from the Lakers and Mo Bamba from the Orlando Magic blocked 51 shots. And number 2, our own Rudy Gobert as second in the NBA in total block shots at 52 block shots, which he averages 2.3 blocks per game. And the number 1 total shot block leader this year in the NBA is Miles Turner, Indiana Pacers, has blocked 67 shots for 2.8. Quickly, the physical and mental attributes of elite shot blockers are 1, positioning, 2, timing, 3, length, 4, quick elevation, and 5, discipline. And in Jazz, let's tie with it right now in Jazz basketball. The late, great Mark Eaton is the four-time leading shot block in history of basketball with 3,064. The number one leader as far as all-time block shot leader is Hakeem Olajuwon with 3,830. And last but not least, Rudy Gobert, as we speak right now, in his 9th NBA season, is the 56th all-time leading shot blocker with 1,272, and I get the feeling, Tom Hackett, that he's going to climb up very highly in that list someday.
Let's go, Rudy. Hey, I love the list within the list. That is Coach Gordy Chiesa, Utah Jazz Insider. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Scott. Peace out. See you, Tom.
See you, Coach. Glad to hear you're doing well.
All right, let's take another break here, but when we come back, we have got your weekend warriors, and oh boy, do we have a list for you today. It is unrivaled. It is 97.5, 1280, The Zone.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280, The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, it's time for a market update. Of course, the market update brought to you by TryDayTrading.com. Now, anyone can be a day trader. Visit TryDayTrading.com. Well, let me tell you, the market, the Dow is up 646 points. Omicron, the variant from coronavirus, it had people a little nervous, and the markets kind of bounced back from that. Now, of course, your NASDAQ is up 139. The S&P is up 53 points. There you go, folks. That's your market update. And, of course, now we are going to get into our weekend warriors. These are folks that, you know, really won the day over the weekend. We have a lot of sports happening, and they won the day. We'll talk about it, but it's brought to you by Tim Daly Nissan of Murray, home of the auto warranty that doesn't quit. It's endless. It's perpetual. It's forever. All right.
I have the auto warranty.
Oh, no, it's amazing. Tim Daly, those guys rock. All right. So here's how it works. If you have someone you thought, you know, kind of – was a weekend warrior, just kind of really made it happen over the weekend, please feel free to add to our list here, subtract from our list, whatever you'd like. But, of course, we have Utah winning the Pac-12 championship. And by the way, they're going to the Rose Bowl. I don't know if you didn't know that, Tom. But I just wanted to put it out there. The Utes are going to the Rose Bowl. That never gets old.
I think we got one of the best assistant coaching staffs in the country. Morgan Scalley and Andy Ludwig did a great job playing off of their game plans from 13 days ago and adding some little subtle changes and some tweaks and some modifications that really complemented what we did 13 days ago. And it was it was great to see that game plan come to fruition. Of course, it's the players who execute it, but couldn't be more proud of our staff. And that's not only the coordinators, but all the position coaches all the way through.
Clearly, Utah just dominated Oregon twice. You know, it's been brought up in two games in 13 days. They won a margin of, like, I don't know, 76 to 17 point. It was just really an insane number. And it takes a village. I mean, you've got a lot of people and a lot of things play into it. But I agree with Coach Whittingham, and these coaches have been remarkable. Andy Ludwig has done just such an incredible job of kind of finding and blending the talent that he has and mixing the pass and run. And Utah's not been a run team. They haven't been a pass team. They've just been an opportunist team. I mean, whatever the defense is giving them, they take it, and they've been able to really be explosive. And then Morgan just did a tremendous job on Anthony Brown and Oregon in this championship game. I mean, it was just remarkable.
Man, I think you got to go back 2 years to the start of the pandemic to really start to get an understanding or an appreciation of just what this coaching staff's done. The pandemic provided different challenges for everybody involved, but this is a group that's gone through a lot. I mean, it was. They've had two tragedies, two passings of players, Scotty. I cannot even imagine the sort of heartache and pain and agony that would endure. Morgan Scully's had some of his own issues come to light over the last couple of years. Coach Shaw is dealing with his wife and all. There's just so much that's been going on that's been made public that they don't want to have happen. But I think it's gotten this group of players and coaches. I think it's galvanized the group. And it's quite remarkable. It does not surprise me Utah's going to the Rose Bowl. But I think on top of all of this, the state of Utah, Scotty, is maybe enjoying its most fruitful football period ever. I think we have some audio from Brandon Bowling's touchdown. Utah State dominated San Diego State in
massive shock.
Oh my goodness!
No question. Yeah.
Bonner looking middle of the field, throwing deep, looking for a man. It's wide open. Caught to the 15, 10, 5, and Brandon Bowling skips into the end zone. Touchdown, Utah State. Brandon Bowling, not a man within 10 yards of him, and the Aggies score first here in the third.
That's a familiar voice. That's
Scotty
old
G.
Scotty G on the call there for the Aggies. Of course, he's in the afternoons with Hans and Scotty, and nice to hear. Utah State might be a more improbable victor than Utah. I mean, and here BYU has had a remarkable season, and I know BYU fans, we're going to get into that in the next segment. You know, they're pretty upset and feel kind of left on the outside right now, but definitely all of these schools, and with where everything was with Gary Anderson, and it just looked like the program was in turmoil. And I think you go, it's going to take some years before this thing really turns around. First year coach just turns it around like
Anderson
in a hot minute.
Yeah, he's been terrific. I mean, I'm just going to say this out loud for the sake of saying it out loud, because I think anybody that's from the great state of Utah needs to appreciate this. Utah State are Mountain West champs. Utah is Pac-12 champs, and BYU, sure, you know, there's an argument that they got snubbed with the bowl game that they're going to, but they're top 13 team in the country. They're the 13th best team in college football by the time it's all said and done.
And when it's all over, it'll be even better. I mean, they win because they're going to win in their bowl game.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pick on BYU. This is weekend warriors. I'm not going to do it.
Save it for the next.
I'm not going to do it. All right. This one I've been waiting a lifetime for. And finally, the Detroit Lions finally have won a game.
First victory of the year on the line. Goff's got it. Back, looks, throws, ends up.
Yes!
Caught! Touchdown, Detroit Lions! They did it! Amon-Ra St. Brown in the receiving end! Oh, they're rushing the field! They've done it! 3-0 on the clock. This game is over. It's over! Jared Goff to Amon-Ra St. Brown, his first career touchdown. And how big is that?
The two Pac-12 players, Jared Goff and Amon-Ra St. Brown, actually do it. What's funny is, like, it sounds like they just won the championship, right?
It's so
and
funny.
This is a team that's not going to go to the playoffs. It's not going to go anywhere.
No, they're going to have the number one overall pick.
I love the fact that these guys are so – because it's hard to win. It is. It's really hard to win. And the poor Detroit Lions. And I've been there. And I'm just, you know, couldn't be happier. And I love the pure joy and excitement of winning their first game in 15 tries.
Scotty, they did everything they could to lose it as well, by the way. I don't know if you caught it. I was watching.
No, it's true.
And it was fourth and one with about 2.5 minutes left. They had a two-point lead. They decided to go for it. All they needed was a yard. Just run the ball. QB sneak it. Do something that's consistent. Instead, they run play action, and Jared Goff gets absolutely belted because, of course, the Vikings were running a blitz, and it was just disaster, I tell you. I have no idea how they won. Good on them. Congratulations. They celebrated like they just won the Super Bowl, but so be it.
In spite of themselves, they won. Okay, really quick here. Of course, BYU's women's soccer team is going for a national championship tonight.
Wow.
And they had a big win in the semifinals over the weekend.
A miss or a save, and BYU is through to the final. Glenn got it off the post! That is it! The Broncos are eliminated! And BYU in their first ever trip to the College Cup is going to the championship game!
There you go. BYU's women's soccer beat Santa Clara, and they're playing Florida State, who is the defending national champion, tonight at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, I think Florida State are also the number one team in the country as well, so it'll be quite a task. But congratulations to the women Cougars. You talk about winning being difficult in the NFL. I mean, I think winning, period's difficult. And the fact that they've been able to become, one of like two teams remaining in all of college soccer, women's college, I mean, that's... Well done.
Quite a sports year happening here in the state of Utah. We're going to take another break. It is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280, The Zone. We come back. I think BYU is, ready to get into the Big 12 in a massive hurry.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All righty, sports fans, welcome on in. It is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. I'm Scott Mitchell, and the guy right next to me is Tom Hackett, of course, former University of Utah, great punter and KSL Sports insider. Welcome to the program, Tom, and Alex Keery is away for a couple of days trying to get sunshine on his very white, pasty body. We got a lot to talk about the rest of the show here, but this segment here, of course, BYU. I think a lot of folks were, if you're a BYU fan, they feel a little bit miffed. They feel a little bit slighted about Selection Sunday and where they fit into anything. That's the cut, which is, do you snore at night or are you currently using a CPAP machine to treat sleep apnea? Sound Sleep Medical can improve your life. Visit soundsleepmedical.com. Your cut. Come.
The question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, I don't know if it's breaking news, but we'll give you some news here. Apparently, Mario Cristobal has been hired at the University of Miami, so that has happened. And then we have Brent Venables, who is a defensive coordinator at Clemson, is now the head coach at Oklahoma. So this should be interesting. Of course, he's got that DNA from Clemson and had quite a bit of success and inherits an Oklahoma program that'd be interesting.
Personally, more than anything, I think Utah fans that are listening to this are now intrigued by what Oregon does as a job opening in the Pac-12. It's one of the top 2 to 3 jobs that you'd prefer in the Pac-12. There's USC, Oregon, and Utah's got to be right out there.
Well,
now,
let me ask you a question about that. Before we get into our BYU discussion, if you're Oregon,
well, do they go after Kalani?
Who do you go after? Because you're kind of, I mean, the pecking order's over, right? It's like all of the good pieces have actually been picked up now, and are you able to go find a guy that you go, yeah, is there someone out there, I guess, or do you do the USC thing and you go poach someone? Is there anyone poachable out there?
I'm sure there has to be somebody poachable out there, but there are also decent candidates.
Well, who's left? Do you know?
Well, Coach O from LSU is available. I don't know. Look, I know. People give him – he won a national title 2 years ago. He's not a horrible coach. He can make –
He did a great job at USC when he was there.
Yeah, he was a great coach assistant at USC. You've obviously got Luke Fickell at Cincinnati. Would he be interested in the Oregon job? I don't know. But he's a talented coach, and they take him. What's your hesitation?
Ed Orgeron at Oregon. Give me some Nikes and eat me a ham sandwich.
You don't like Coach O? The thought of Coach O?
I like him because I like his voice. I'll give you a guy. You want a guy?
Yeah.
I'll give you a guy. How about Mike Leach?
I don't know if Oregon would like Mike Leach. I think he's perfect for
Oregon,
Mississippi State.
Are you kidding? Mike Leach is like – Oregon is a place of, you know, kind of
– He would probably thrive. He'd probably thrive.
You think he'd thrive?
I think he'd be pretty good. They have everything he needs. That air raid, are you kidding me? I mean, they have all the talents in the world.
You think Kalani would end up somewhere? But does Kalani want to go now?
So here's a question, Scotty. And I'm not just throwing this out there for the sake of throwing it out.
I think you should.
I think it's worthy
regardless,
of conversation.
Let's throw it out there.
Why wouldn't Oregon go after Morgan Scalley?
Wow.
Like seriously, why wouldn't – so he had the scandal, but he stayed. His job was kept safe, so – they found something that warranted. So if you can kind of get past that, why wouldn't he?
You know what's hard about Utah? Because this has come up. And there have been people who have said, why are not more Utah assistants? This is funny. We've got a BYU segment here and we're talking about Utah. This doesn't happen when Alex is here.
You started this.
But you know what? When I'm here, we're gonna do it right, okay? We'll get to you, BYU people. Just calm down.
Spit it out. Don't be throwing jabs.
I'm not throwing jabs. I'm just,
you're
know.
You're asking for trouble, Scotty. No. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
No. With the Utah assistants, it's like there's this whole idea of, wow, okay. So a potential Chip Kelly going back to Oregon. So there's a list of potential coaches that would go back to Oregon.
According to ESPN.
Dave Aranda, who's the Baylor head coach. Matt Campbell at Iowa State. Brian Harsin, who, of course, was at Boise State, who's now at Auburn. Why would you want to leave Auburn to go to Oregon? I don't know. I mean, I guess Auburn's not – you're kind of the – you know, you're the
– second fiddle to Alabama.
You really are, yeah. But back to these Utah assistants, because we're like squirrels here. We're all over the place. I think here's the challenge with Morgan. I think he's an exceptional coach, and clearly he was going to be the heir apparent to Kyle Whittingham, and so that's probably why a lot of maybe Morgan would have moved on before now. You know, maybe after a couple of those Pac-12 championship years, especially a couple of years ago, maybe that happens. Kyle Whittingham is kind of – he's Utah football. I mean it's – you really get a sense that he's kind of got his thumb on everything. Like and so, you know, a lot of times you'll have a guy who's maybe – I'm over here and maybe I'm a defensive coach and I got my coordinator over there and he just kind of does his own thing. And almost like Oregon, you know, where the offensive coordinator now heads to another job. But it's like Kyle, to me, this is just my opinion. It's just Kyle is such a dominant force of Utah football. He's kind of is Utah football. And I just, you know, I don't know that I see, you know, he had Kalani who I guess moved on. You know, he's had other coaches. Jay Hill has moved on.
You're not telling me. If Morgan Scalley was approached by Oregon, you're not saying that he wouldn't be interested in that. You better believe he's interested.
You'd have to be, yeah.
You better believe he's interested in that job.
I just wonder if he is, though.
No, Scotty, stop that nonsense. What are you talking about?
I mean, like, do you think Morgan Scalley is is there's interest from Oregon.
I have no idea. I have no idea.
I think Oregon has to be a really high profile name. It's like USC.
Like, I get it. I'm with you.
I don't know that you could have a young and up and coming guy as your head coach at Oregon. Maybe a guy goes for an interview and he just blows the socks off of him and they just go, yeah, we gotta have this guy because Morgan's a dynamic individual. I think he's an excellent coach.
I think this narrative about young up and coming coaches that are yet to prove themselves not being up to the challenge of going. I mean, like people said that about Sean McVay at the LA Rams. Look what he's done. The same can be said for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. The same thing can be said for the guy down at the Arizona.
Cliff Kingsbury.
I mean, like, there's so many young coaches now coming through the sport in both the college scene and the NFL scene. I just don't know if there's a narrative out there that you can say.
But that's the trend. Like, it was trendy. It's like it's kind of like we're done with these names. We're done with regurgitating the names. Kind of like we just saw a regurgitation of some names, and I think there was like, why don't we just go with a young? Because I can tell you. Bill Belichick was not a name when he started. Don Shula wasn't a name when he started. He was 35 years old when he got a head coaching job. I mean there are a lot of guys that have been these no-name guys. So yeah, there's a possibility for someone like Morgan Scalley to get a job. Absolutely.
Well, we heard a clip from Kyle Whittingham about 30 minutes ago of him after the Pac-12 title game, praising how good his assistants and stating that he believes his assistant coaching staff's one of the best, if not the best in the country.
All right, we have a lot to talk about, and I don't know how to get through all this, but we'll try. So I've noticed something about BYU. Like a lot of BYU fans are just upset. Like how does Utah jump BYU? How does BYU play seven Power Five schools, lose one, right? They're 6-1 against Power Five schools. And how does Utah jump them? They have fewer losses, and they beat Utah.
I think it's pretty explanatory, don't you? I mean, I don't understand what all the fuss is about. That's
the argument. That's the BYU side. It's like why should that happen? Because I think there's this slight.
Let's talk about it then. They beat Arizona.
Yes.
Yep. Is Arizona an adequate football
Arizona's
team now?
Garbage.
Thank you.
Yeah.
They beat Utah. That is probably their best win all season.
Yes.
Right now, you go back and you go, Utah's probably their best win, and Utah was not good then. They beat Arizona State. Arizona State ended the season unranked. They were okay. They weren't as good as many thought.
And they fumbled the ball away. I mean, the opening kickoff, they fumbled it.
I'm just talking about Power Five. We don't even need to go into the fact that they lost to Boise State at home. I mean, they lost to Boise State at home. They lost to a really good Baylor team.
Yes.
But then outside of that, Washington State, Virginia, USC, broken. I mean, like, none of these Power Five teams are good outside of Baylor.
And Utah.
And Utah, but Utah were pretty bad. I guess it doesn't matter. So that's why. I mean, like, can we stop, like, talking about BYU and how they're, oh, I'm so sorry, you're not. It's like you played a decent schedule, but it wasn't good. It's not a good schedule.
Well, I think you can argue any Power Five school plays a pretty easy schedule. I mean, I wasn't convinced that Georgia was the best team in the country.
Well, apparently over the weekend, it proved that they were.
But I just looked at their schedule and I go, "This is a weak schedule. Like this could be a house of cards here." And maybe Georgia is a little bit overblown about how good they are because I don't know how many teams, really good teams, they've played. But you could, I think you could say that about a lot of teams. Here's what jumped out at me. Cincinnati is in a conference. And they've become a dominant team in a conference, and it's not a great conference.
No,
it's an AAC. It's decent, right? I mean, they're going to take Cincinnati, Houston, UCF out of that conference, and they're going to put them in. There's three teams that are going to be Power Five teams. out of that conference. So it's a decent conference. But it's still not a Power 5 conference. And they won a conference championship. And BYU has talked about this independence, and it's been a great thing, and it's been a wonderful thing. And there've been a lot of people, myself included, I don't think it's a great thing. I think when you can become a dominant player in your conference, because now a group of five school, an independent type of school, has now gotten into the college football playoffs. And I believe they got into it because they were just so dominant. And I believe that BYU could be a dominant team in a conference, even if it was the Mountain West. And I know people are going to argue and say, but we got so much more money from being ESPN. Independent and ESPN and all that stuff. Because BYU is not Notre Dame. No. Not as far as how people in college football look at Notre Dame. Notre Dame is college football.
I wonder if they thought maybe they could rival Notre Dame as an independent at the start of it. I wonder if that train of thought ever entered their mind.
I think they felt that it was about revenue and about generating as much as they could, and they couldn't do that in the Mountain West. And I think it would make it really, really hard for them to even find a way to remotely compete against some of the – because I don't think BYU has ever looked at itself as a group of five team. I think they've looked at themselves as a Power 5 school. And so I think that was the move. But here's the problem. So if you're an independent, okay, you're an independent, you're not a part of any conference, and you lose two games. I don't care who you lose to. You lose two games, you're not getting in the college football playoffs.
No, but I think they wanted to get into a New Year's Six Bowl. And I understand. In my humble opinion.
Even a New Year's Six game they're not going to get into.
See, I don't agree with that.
Oh, there's no – I'm just telling you. There's like
– What is it, the top –
You gotta be undefeated. You gotta be UCF. You gotta be Cincinnati. You gotta be Boise State. You gotta be Utah. You gotta go undefeated.
The problem,
you can't lose two games and be a non-Power 5 school and get into a New Year's Day game. It's just not gonna happen.
I mean, you can't lose to Boise State. You can't do it.
No.
No. I agree with that. But with all that said, the only reason they're not in a New Year's Six is because they're the third ranked group of five / independent team in the ranking. That's basically the reason, is it not? Cincinnati at 4, Notre Dame at 5, they're at 13.
Right.
And if Cincinnati's not Cincinnati, or if Cincinnati's what normally Cincinnati is, then they're probably playing in a New Six Bowl.
Yeah, and there are other factors that played into it, and it may have been a little different, and they may have gotten in, but it's not because there's a bias against BYU. It's just kind of how the cards played out, how the teams won or lost or whatever, and so there was the possibility. But here's the other thing that really stood out to me about all this. You know, I hear everyone complaining. Well, if why is this team ahead of us, and why is this team not ahead of us, and why do we get moved back, and why do they not consider this? The reality is, you have schools in the state of Utah that are being talked about on a national stage. All right, right now, nobody's talking about Arizona and Arizona State. Nobody's talking about Stanford and Cal. Nobody's talking about Washington, Washington State.
Nobody's talking about UCLA or USC. Nobody, crying out loud.
Right? The national media and discussion about college football is talked about here in the state of Utah. And everyone should be excited about that.
Everybody should be excited.
This is rarefied air. And it's like there really should be an appreciation. And I'm talking all sides here. I'm talking across the board. If you're a fan of college football and you live in the state of Utah and you follow any team, it doesn't matter. There is enough for everybody to go around. Like really. I made this comment on our show back before the season started, and we were discussing, is this going to be the year that BYU finally beats Utah? Alex and I were talking about it on the show, and I said, you know what would be funny? You know what would be ironic? Is if BYU beats Utah this year and Utah ends up going to the Rose Bowl and winning the Pac-12 championship. And I said that on our show, and it's happened. And it is ironic. It's ironic because people are like, You know, how can everyone have a good year? And really, that's what's like, everyone has had a good year.
Let me ask you, do you understand the frustration from BYU fans? Because I do.
Oh, of course.
I mean, they won 10 games and lost 2, for crying out loud, and they're playing UAB in the Independence Bowl. Like, I get it. But it's kind of like you've dug your own grave, in my opinion.
It's University of Alabama.
Whatever it is, it's like you've dug your own grave. That's what this is. What independence is. This is the lifestyle you've chosen, and this is the cruel reality. And so I understand their frustration, but I don't sympathize with them necessarily. Because what are you going to do? You're an independent football team, and this whole bowl system is set up for conferences ultimately.
Yeah, and a select few conferences, by the way. It's not even every It's not even every conference. So we had this discussion, and I'll just start it. I know we're a little bit short on time, but it'll be okay. You think Mario Cristobal going to Miami is a downgrade?
Yes.
Compared to being at Oregon, so you think Oregon's a better job than Miami?
Without question, Scotty, you're living in the 1980s. That's what you're living in the 1990s. You're living back when they were really a formidable team.
They were good in the 2000s.
Yeah, but they're not. They're not that now. That's 20
years
ago. Well,
it is the 2000s. Isn't that 20 years ago?
You want me to pull up? I have it right here, in fact, because I was waiting for this. Do you know like the recent bowl games they've been to? So they're going to the Sun Bowl this year, just to let you know. They went to the Cheez-It Bowl last year, the Independence Bowl the year before that, Pinstripe Bowl in 2018. The last meaningful bowl game they went to was the Orange Bowl in 2017.
Well, that wasn't 20 years ago. It was only five
they lost.
Years ago.
They lost in the Orange Bowl.
But they've been going to bowl games.
They've been going to bowl games. My point is Oregon.
Look, don't knock the Cheez-It Bowl or the Sun Bowl. And by the way, it's the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, just so you know.
Oregon is a annual top 15
the
team.
Sun Bowl's a New Year's game. Right? Or New Year's Eve?
No, the Sun Bowl is hot. Isn't that the one in El Paso that everybody doesn't want to go? Yeah, it's the Sun Bowl. Were you talking about the year before I got here in 2011, and all I heard about it was how horrible it was?
It's awesome. All right, we got to take a break. But when we come back, old Jeremiah Jensen from KSL TV is going to join us.
Oregon went to the Alamo Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, and the Rose Bowl in the last 3 years, Scott.
We'll talk about this later, all right? Keep the attitude, though. I like it. All right. This is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We'll be back in just a bit.
Attention. This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. Attention. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
Alrighty, folks, welcome back. It is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. I'm Scott Mitchell, and the other guy over there, that's Tom Hackett. He's filling in for Alex Geary. Tom, of course, he's a KSL sports insider, and your main focus is RSL and golf, right?
RSL golf, but I do try to stay tuned into all of them. But days like these, Scotty.
Oh, my goodness. I know. It's days like these. It's weekends like these. I'm not sure that there's been a more exciting weekend of sports, or even a year of sports, period. But look, are you prepping for the holidays? Zero Res can help clean up before and after the festivities. Keep your carpets clean well into 2022. Give us a jingle by calling or booking online at ZeroResSaltLake.com. Or if you're up north, it's ZeroResDavisWeber.com. Jeremiah Jensen from KSL TV joins us. Jeremiah, how are you?
I'm well. How could you not be after a fun weekend? That was college football at its finest. It was fun.
I got to ask you, JJ.
Yeah.
Has this year been like the most, changed, like earth-shattering, most successful season that you've seen in college football in across the state, across the board? Has this been the best year, or are there others, are there years I'm missing?
Well, so if you go through some of the best years that Utah or BYU had, it's hard to find a year where they both had 10 win seasons and then you add the Aggies into the mix. No, I don't recall a year And I believe we looked into this. This is the first year that BYU, Utah, and Utah State all won 10 games. And then you add to the fact that BYU is finishing top 13 in the final poll, final college football playoff ranking, and Utah and Utah State won conference championships. I don't know that this has ever been topped in state history. This is a golden age of college football in the state of Utah, no question.
And just in case new listeners are out there and they're not aware of this, Utah is going to the Rose Bowl. I just want to bring that up again.
Jay said this.
I love to hear this. I just, you know, it doesn't get old. In fact, it gets better every time I say it. Utah is going to the Rose Bowl.
Crazy, right? It's reality. They've done it. And if you look at, it was their 11th season in the Pac-12, and for them to do it in that span of time, when you consider that Arizona's never done it, it's pretty remarkable. And, you got to give Coach Whittingham a lot of credit, that program, and all the players that helped build this to where it is now. Even going back to last decade, the team that made it to the Sugar Bowl, and before that, the team that made it to Fiesta Bowl and had the perfect seasons, all those players, everybody that was involved with that program over this successful run of the last three decades, I'll go back to Ron McBride, helped build all this foundation to get this to where this is now. They all should take so much joy in this accomplishment that was years and years in the making, and now everyone gets to enjoy it. It's pretty special, and it's rare, and I hope that people, I guess you can get greedy and think that this is going to happen every year. It just doesn't. So Utah fans need to really enjoy this. I certainly hope it happens more often. It'd be great for all of us.
Jay, you're as well-versed in the sporting landscape as anybody around these parts. So you've obviously seen a lot of seasons. You've seen a lot of things transpire. But they started 1-2. They didn't look good at all. And then there's an argument to be made that there may be a top six team. When you just look at teams in form right now, there may be a top six team nationally. Do you have any idea as to how it all happened?
I think the talent was always there. I think, obviously, they picked the wrong quarterback to start the season, and Scott, I sure can attest to this. The quarterback position is so important, and you've got to have a guy that everyone believes in. Kyle called Cam Rising an alpha dog, and I think that they found that guy, and I'm not sure at what point. I think the USC game was a breakout game for him. But then the second half of Arizona State is when I think everything kind of flipped, where this team really believed that they could beat anybody and that they could do whatever they wanted to do as long as they executed properly. They had to slip up at Oregon State, and I think that was a lot of young players, especially on defense, that made some mistakes and needed to learn from those mistakes. And I think that has made them a better team as well. And so I think it really started, though, with Cam Rising's emergence as a starter and this team really having somebody at the quarterback position they could believe in. And then you had those young players on defense that needed to step up, along with Devin Lloyd and Nephi Sewell and a lot of other veterans on that defense that rose, their level of play rose as well to match those guys. And now you have a juggernaut. And I think you factor in all those things, and now you got a really confident bunch that think they can go out and dominate anybody in the country, because they just did it to Oregon, who was at one point ranked third in the country.
BYU fans are a little bit upset, kind of where they kind of shook out in the end of this. What's your take on BYU and where they ended up, and was that a fair shake? Could it have been different? Should it have been different?
There's nothing fair about BYU's situation. They are 13th ranked in the country, 10-2. If you want to claim the Boise State loss is bad, you can, but I don't think that Boise State team is bad. I mean, you lost at Baylor. I mean, there's no shame in that. Baylor is one of the best teams in the country. BYU had a remarkable season. They've had a remarkable two seasons, and their coaching staff has done such a phenomenal job, and for good reason. Kalani's being mentioned as a candidate for the Oregon job. That's the level that he's coached at. So this is a special season for BYU. And it doesn't seem right or fair that it's ending in the Independence Bowl against UAB. I feel like they should be playing another top 15, top 20 team. I just don't like the matchup. I don't like the way it ends. And I think BYU fans are feeling that same way. Now, just the system that currently is set up. I mean, they had an agreement with the Independence Bowl that the New Year's Six didn't want them, and it didn't work out at that point. They just didn't get it far enough in the rankings to get there. And this is just how it worked out. But here's the good news, BYU fans, in one more season of Independence, and then in 2023, if you go 10-2, then you're going to a big time bowl game, and there's nothing anybody can do to stop it. So this is a temporary frustration. Brighter days are ahead, and teams at BYU that win 10 games are going to be recognized in a proper way. And I think that's something to look forward to and be excited about. And you know what? Go celebrate this team this year. I think they're going to go just absolutely destroy UAB in this bowl game, and they'll finish with 11 wins, which is a remarkable run. And then you can look ahead to what next year is going to be fun. The schedule's great. And then 2023 will be a new era of BYU football where anything is possible.
Jerry, if I'm not mistaken, you were in Carson, California, right, this weekend?
Yeah, I was.
Is that maybe the best story of all of this in the state of Utah, from where Utah State was to winning the Mountain West Conference? I mean, it's special.
It is. And, like, I have to say that what Utah has done, overcoming the loss of two teammates and the 1-2 start and the quarterback change and everything going on, for them to be where they're at, I mean, that is like, you could make a movie about the 2021 Utah football team. So that's a different kind of story. But as far as a Cinderella story, a team that nobody thought was any good, a team that 12 months ago had no coach and had all kinds of controversy going on around their program and frustration, kids leaving. It just felt like the bottom fell out of that program. And Just like that, you hire the right coach who has gone through his own adversity in his life, Blake Anderson, and he came right into this program, and he got all of the guys that were there to buy in and believe in what he was doing. He assembled a terrific staff of hungry young coaches and coordinators to come in and help him do this. And those players bought in, and he had to bring some transfers in. That helped. Look, I mean, Logan Bonner has been a terrific addition. Brandon Bowling. Byron Vaughns. Now, these are names that people here are familiar with. They had great seasons. But to go from a team that was picked to finish fifth in the Mountain West division, not the conference, the division, and that team won the conference championship on San Diego State's home field, who was ranked number 19 in the country, and they beat them 46-13, that's an incredible story. And if you're a Utah State fan, you should be so proud, pumped, excited. This is just an amazing story. And it's such a phenomenal turnaround. And Blake Anderson should get Coach of the Year accolades and attention. I don't know if he could win it, but he certainly deserves it. He wasn't even Mount West Coach of the Year. That's a travesty.
Well, yeah, shocking.
What he did is just, I mean, he did one of the best coaching jobs in the country, and he should be recognized for it. And Utah State fans should be so proud of how that team represented their school this year and what they accomplished.
You know, as you're talking, I had this interesting thought about, You look at Utah State, you look at Utah, and in a lot of ways you look at BYU, and you're like, they just found a way to kind of will themselves to remarkable seasons and overcoming things, and it's very easy to get discouraged or to kind of not have that faith and that belief and that hope that you can do it. And it just goes to show you how powerful our minds can be when we, you know, collectively put things together and say, okay, you know, we're going to do this. I mean, the tragedy that happened at Utah and the slow start and BYU having an amazing year and losing their quarterback, the second pick in the draft, and coming out and saying, yeah, we're going to beat all the Power Five schools that we play this year. And people are like, sure you are. You know what I mean? But believing that you can do that, and then Utah State and what they did, and just saying, yeah, we're going to win the Mountain West, you know, title. I mean, it's remarkable the power that our minds have when we put them together and we make things happen.
It takes a CEO, it takes a coach that can get the guys to buy in. And you look at all three teams; they had alpha dog quarterbacks. I mean, you guys talk to Jaron Hall every week. That kid's an alpha dog, man. He's a leader. And so you had to have those elements, and it all just came together for them. And it's a tribute to all those programs that believed. And it's a lesson for all of us that if you really believe in yourself and what you're doing, and you do things the right way, and you're willing to make sacrifices, you can accomplish your dreams. And all three teams did that this year. And that should really inspire all of us that follow them, that we can do the same thing. So I think the impact that these teams had this year will have an impact on the state for a long time. And I think college football is just going to get better and better here.
There you go. Life lessons with Jeremiah Jensen. All right, what do you got on what do you got on TV tonight, JJ?
So BYU's first reaction about their bowl situation. There is a coach on the move in the Pac-12 that could have an impact on teams here in Utah and some players as well. And the BYU women's soccer team is playing for a national championship tonight. You can see all the highlights from that coming up tonight.
Big night at sports. All right, thanks, JJ. We're going to take a break.
You got it.
It is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. We come back. Boy, what do we have? Oh, Tom is hot. He is hot about Miami. Is it a better job than Oregon? And maybe some of these guys JJ's talking about in the, might be going in the transfer portal.
Well, JJ just mentioned that Kalani's a candidate.
Oh, that might be interesting.
Oregon.
All right, we'll check it out when we come back.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, right?
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell, Tom Hackett filling in for Alex Keery, who's sunbathing his white body to try to get some, you know.
He's burning.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
Oh, he's lobster boy. No question about it. Hey, look, it's the fifth annual Black Friday sale going on now at Davis Vision Center. Tired of glasses or contacts? Get LASIK now and save $1,400. There are limited spots available, so act now. Check them out at davisvisionmd.com or call 801-253-3080 today. That's Davis Vision. All right, Tom. Tom's been doing some research. And you want to share some of the, what is it, Vegas odds here on who's going to be the next Oregon coach?
Well, this is interesting.
This is fascinating, folks.
So Jeremiah.
Hey, wait. If you're in your car, make sure your seatbelt's on before you hear this. This is riveting.
Jeremiah mentioned that Kalani Sitake may be a candidate for the Oregon job, so I did some digging, and the odds are out. Chip Kelly is favored at +150.
That's so amazing.
Like, he's odds-on favorite. And then, but second,
can I just make a comment to that real quick? We'll let the folks wait for just a second. That's like, there's a saying that says, it's so much easier to give birth than to resurrect the dead. Right. And Chip Kelly's kind of days at Oregon, they just feel like they've gone by the wayside.
But didn't he cheat? Didn't he get caught cheating at Oregon? Wasn't that like part of the whole like reason?
No, I don't think he got. I think he kind of inherited as Jim Harbaugh says, he started on third base and didn't know he'd hit a triple.
But this is okay. So the second is.
Do you know what that means? Because I didn't. I do now. See, I feel intelligent because I listen to our show. And you gain intelligence. Do you know what it means?
No, I didn't listen. It means
that you've inherited something really good, and he was referring to Ryan Day. So Urban Meyer built this program up at Ohio State. Ryan Day inherits it.
Yes.
And doesn't realize like you only have to go from third to home. Oh, because you don't know baseball. Do you know baseball?
No, I get it.
Okay.
I get it.
You understand.
He got
it,
very
now.
Lucky with what he inherited.
Right, yeah. And I think that was maybe the deal with Chip Kelly a little bit.
Kalani Sitake's the second favorite at +400.
He's number two.
And I get it. I get it.
That's pretty.
What is he, 21-3 over the last two seasons?
Yeah.
I mean, like, he's won football games at a clip very few do.
Maybe Kalani is a guy that can. Maybe he's the guy.
Why is Chip Kelly such an odds-on favorite? I don't understand.
I don't understand either.
He failed in the NFL and he's been okay at UCLA. Seriously, he's been okay.
Because if you do see UCLA right, they can win at UCLA.
I agree.
Well, but the other names are interesting as well.
Justin Wilcox, the Cowherd coach. Brian Hassin. Chris Peterson's interesting.
Mr. Peterson?
He's +800. I doubt it, though, from what I've heard.
It seems like he's kind of not interested in coaching anymore.
No, but because the game of college football's changed so
much. But don't you think...
The NIL and the transfer, but he hates it all. Why would you do it?
Well, that sounds like Bronco Mendenhall.
Dave Aranda. It's Urban Meyer's the same way. All this talk about Urban Meyer potentially going back to USA, I was like, it's never going to happen. Have you ever spoken to anybody that's spoken to Urban Meyer and he's explained how much he hates college football now? These head coaches have no more power. They have very little power.
He's in love with, like, the NFL.
Well, he's also not a very good NFL coach. But he's not. I just don't see him coming back to college. Anyway.
All right. So Oregon is clearly looking for a new coach. That just happened today. And we kind of thought that might happen. What does it mean to Oregon? Because I kind of wondered about Mario Cristobal, right? And I sent out a couple of texts when I heard about him. And I just said, so Nephi Sewell, who is here at Utah, linebacker, had a phenomenal year for the Utes. His brother, Noah, who played high school football here in Utah, and, of course, Penny, who played high school football here in Utah, is now with the Detroit Lions. Hey, the one win, Detroit Lions. Good job, Lions. Way to go. Why not get him at Utah?
Well, so what would you do if you were Noah Sewell? What would you do? Because I know what I'm doing. I'm waiting for the head coach. I'm waiting for an announcement on who the head coach is going to be, and then I'm going to make a decision.
And then you're going to make
if
a decision.
If Kalani Sitake is hired as a head coach, I'm probably staying if I'm Noah Sewell.
Probably staying. No question about it.
But Chip Kelly gets hired there, I don't know if I'm going to stay.
Good point.
So I think we have to wait.
But if you look, what team in the Pac-12 is better than Utah right now?
There isn't one.
There's not even a close team to Utah right
look,
now.
Look, if Oregon had
Lincoln Riley's going to get things done at USC.
It's, how long? 2 years you think it's going to
take?
Well,
I mean, look at Blake Anderson at Utah. I mean, it didn't take him a couple of years. And the transfer portal and USC always has athletes. They'll be very competitive next year.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with Jackson Dart.
Yeah. But if you're – I'm curious about recruits. Because I think not only does Utah winning and showing that they're the top dog, and the fact that Oregon has kind of been the poster child for the Pac-12, Mario Cristobal is leaving. You have to wonder, did Lincoln Riley getting hired have an impact on Mario Cristobal going, I can't compete against USC anymore?
I don't think so. You think Mario Cristobal would think like that?
I wonder. I think Lincoln Riley left Oklahoma because he's like, I don't want to compete against Alabama and Georgia and all these other schools. He goes, I can go to the Pac-12. I can get in the college football playoffs. I can have great players at USC. Lincoln Riley coming to USC is a no-brainer.
Well, yeah, because I can live in Norman, Oklahoma, or Southern California on the water. I mean, like, that plays into it too, Scotty.
I hate Southern California. I think it's terrible, but I prefer Norman over it. I really do.
Okay, but you're a minority. That is not a majority vote. You're out of your mind.
No, a lot of people are leaving California. I'll just tell you that right now. But aside from that, we don't need to debate that. But because I'm right. But aside from that.
If you had $100 million, you'd be fine living in Southern California. People are leaving because of the half price you did.
I'd be happy with that.
Yeah,
you could
live pretty good.
But does Mario Cristobal leaving, getting back to him, does him leaving impact recruiting?
Oh, yeah.
I have a name I want to throw out.
Please.
Gabe Reed.
Out of Stanford.
And I know it's not an Oregon player, but it's an Oregon player who might end up at Utah. And a very good a Stanford player, very good Stanford player. And his brother, Kareni Reed, who was just exceptional at Utah until he got injured. I mean he's gonna be kind of the next generation of linebackers that Utah's gonna have.
Yeah.
Utah's almost becoming linebacker U. By the way.
But this is what happens when you wing. There's no secret. Like, I don't know if listeners out there know this, but it was reported by KSL Sports Utah Football Insider Trevor Allen last night that Kyle Whittingham was in Florida yesterday recruiting. He was on recruiting trips in Florida yesterday. They won the Pac-12 on Friday night, and however many days later, he's on the other side of the country recruiting.
Yeah, they got 10 days, the early signing period. So they got to strike while the iron's
hot.
That's
what I mean.
You're going to the Rose Bowl, and yes. you got to milk that for all it's worth.
If you want to take this program to the next level, it's now. Do it now.
I'm just fascinated. I really am. I'm fascinated by what kind of impact this could have. A tangible impact, like not just it sounds good. Oh yeah, we got a good program kind of thing. But like, I want to see the meter moved. Like, I want to see, is Utah's recruiting class going to be the top one in the Pac-12? Is it going to be two? Is it going to not move the needle at all? I'm fascinated to see. I just have to believe this has an impact.
I don't know if it matters a ton. And the reason I say that, Utah, night and day, the best team in the Pac-12 this year, and their recruiting classes has hovered around the middle of the pack.
Right.
So they if they can get a really good recruiting, maybe they take the program to the next level, but they don't necessarily need it. The coaching staff at Utah has proven that they can work with guys that aren't overly highly recruited, that have a motor, that have a reason as to why they play and that are passionate about the game. I think that, for me, is one of the very many reasons Utah's gotten to where they do. I'm a Kalani Sitake fanboy. I think if he goes to Oregon,
I think it'd be
they
awesome.
Thrive.
I think it'd be I awesome really to do. See Kalani at Oregon.
I think they thrive.
All right, we're going to take another break here, but before we do, look, be caller 12 right now at 855-340-9663 and give us the Rocky Mountain Chevy Play of the Weekend that was given out on DJ and PK this morning. With an impressive lineup of cars, trucks, and SUVs, it's no wonder that people are switching to Chevy. Rocky Mountain Chevy Dealers.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback. And, the other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All righty, sports fans, welcome back. It is unrivaled 97.5 1280 The Zone, Scott Mitchell and Tom Hackett, who is filling in for Alex Geary, who is, he's suntanning his pasty white body. Anyways, Tom is a former Utah great, and he is a... He's an insider for KSLSports.com. So thank you so much again for joining. Always fun to chat with Tom, and he's always has great insight and great opinions on everything. Let me ask you. So this is, of course, the NFL Roundup, and LHM Used Car Supermarket. Over 1,000 used vehicles in inventory. Shop online at LHMUsedCars.com. I got to ask you. So this is the NFL Roundup. Do we have NFL Roundup music? No more. Oh no, I'm sorry. We did that at the open, right? We did the NFL Roundup. Very good, Jeremy. You're on top of it. Anyway, so we basically kind of talk, you know, NFL. We talk about the NFL every day on this show. It's what we do. It's who we are. It's our DNA, right? The Bills are playing the Patriots, and this is fascinating to me. That Mac Jones has just had this incredible year as a rookie, and he's playing better than any of the rookies drafted. He was the last one picked, and of course he's playing, which always happens because you know when you're last means you're on a good team.
Yeah,
and so that helps you out. They're expecting 50-mile-an-hour gusts in Buffalo tonight for this game. Have you ever played in a game that's just that brutal?
50-mile-an-hour. So that 50
so
mile an
sustained
hour
winds of 20 miles
yeah,
an
sustained
hour.
Sustained winds
just
of
like 20 miles an hour. Think of, it's like your car driving through, you know, like a school zone. I mean, it's got some movement to
Scotty,
it.
Scotty, as a former collegiate punter, prior to the game on game day, one of the first things I would always do is look up the wind for that day, and if it was anything upwards of 10, I would have a hard time, you know, like not thinking. It would kind of ruin me for the rest of the day up until game time. Constant 20-mile-an-hour gusts with gusts up to 50 miles. That's insanity. Like, what do you do? You just run the football.
Did you ever kick at a ball? Punt at a ball? You call it punting, right?
Yeah.
And miss it?
No.
You never missed it?
Scotty, I'm coordinated, but this is insulting. You're even bringing this up. Why? What are you
saying? No, because of the wind. No, what I'm saying. Did you ever get in a wind game that was just so brutal?
No.
Hey, I've seen NFL punters. Okay, really good ones. Sean Landetta, who punted like 20 years at the NFL, he swung and missed once. He was a punter.
Yeah, but where? What team?
He would play for the Giants. The Meadowlands.
Was it MetLife when he missed?
Well, it was Giant Stadium back in the day, but it was. I want to think there was a guy who played for the Bears. So you got same thing. He swung and missed.
No, I don't know if I...
Wait, I insulted you?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to insult you.
No, that's all right. I have a tough chin, but I was insulted that you thought I maybe missed a punt.
Well, not that I think you're bad, of course. It's just the weather conditions.
Yeah, no. What would you do as a quarterback?
I hate wind. Of all the elements, it's like wind is brutal. If you get wind like this, especially with such a massive variation, so consistent winds of 20... That you can deal with, you know, if you're just, you know what it's going to
because be. Because you can adjust.
But the gusts, that's when it's just brutal.
So you just run the football, don't you?
Yeah, but if
imagine being a running back, though.
Well, imagine them going,
freezing cold and you're just getting battered.
Well, you're not cold in the game.
What are you talking about? In Buffalo, in the middle of a snowstorm with 50 miles, you're cold, Scotty. You're not warm.
Yeah, they have so much magic today that they keep these players warm. Serious.
You
don't have to warm up anymore.
Carrying the rock, and you get a helmet to the middle finger, you know. You're feeling that.
Well, see, here's the thing, Tom. Like, when you were playing college football, you hung out on the sideline most of the time, right? And then you would go on the field for a play.
Yes.
But you're a punter at Utah with Kyle Whittingham as the head coach. You're going to go on the field quite a bit, right?
First two seasons I did, yeah.
It's a lot of punting.
Yeah.
A running back, your body heats up when you're playing. It's got to be brutally cold. I mean, it's got to be below zero for you to just, you know, a temperature in the 30s, the 20s, the teens. It's not too bad.
I'm going to look it up right now, because on the weather app these days, you can look up, like, not just like what the temperature is, but what it feels like with the wind in it. Yeah. Where are they playing?
With the wind
Buffalo?
Chill. Yeah, Buffalo, New York, right now.
It's 37, okay?
Yeah. But with the wind, that's got to feel like...
24,
yeah. What happens if it gusts? You get a gust of like Arctic cold air, then you're screwed.
24 degrees Fahrenheit. That's...
See, that's a warm.
And by the way, we're on the subject, like there are people out there. You're probably one of them, Scotty, because you come from this generation that you look at this weather and you go,
Wait. This generation? I'm from a way back when generation.
My
what
point
generation?
Is, no, this is that's what I'm saying.
What generation are you from?
This is what I'm saying.
What do they call you? Are you a
millennial? I think
you're a millennial, Gen Xer.
No, but this is what I was going to say.
I'm a Gen Xer.
You're from a generation.
You're a Gen Zer.
Hey, stop talking. Where people look at this snowstorm and go, this is football weather.
Oh, yeah.
Stop with that. This is not football
this
weather.
This is a spring. Oh.
Like, Coach Witt, love him, would do the same. I mean, I look at him like, you've lost your marbles, Coach. Like, this is not football weather. This is torture.
No.
And if I didn't get paid $30,000 a game to play... If I'm in college, I'm not walking out.
Is that what you got paid at Utah was $30,000?
No, but that's what the rookie NFL players will make. That's minimum salary.
Oh,
like
they'll
$30,000 a game.
Oh, no, they'll make more
than $50,000 a game, whatever it is.
I think they make about $600,000 a year.
Divide that by whatever. It's like 50, 60. I don't know.
Take all the taxes out.
Okay. But
how
you
did
get the
you
point.
Know that?
Well, I don't know, Scotty. Oh, I signed a contract.
You're Mitch Wynowski guy. He knows.
Well, yeah, he would know.
How's he doing, by the way?
He's good.
Yeah.
But this football, this conversation about football
weather. I mean, you
want to
talk
about. Shut up, would you? Football weather. You're playing in a bloody snowstorm. It feels like 24 degrees.
But that's the cool part about it.
There's nothing cool about this.
Yes, it is.
No,
it's like battling the elements. It's like there's no excuse. It's like we're not going to stop this game. It's like you want to see if you're manly. Whoa, whoa. Tough.
Spare me, Scotty. That's nonsense. You're talking nonsense. That's crazy. This is too much.
Do you know what I can't get used to?
Huh.
I can't wrap my head around this. It's everything is opposite in Australia. So like right now, where we're supposed to be getting into winter.
Yeah.
Like this is summer in Australia, right?
Yeah, I'm going back in January. It's going to be the middle of summer.
And it'll be just hot.
Yeah.
And that just I just can never wrap my head around that.
Well, the sun and the moon and the earth.
Well, and the other thing is that the water goes the opposite direction.
In the toilet. Yeah.
Did that throw you off when you came to America?
I didn't even notice it, to be fair.
Oh, you didn't even?
No.
At all?
I actually, I don't, I'm not one of those people that stares into a toilet and watches it flush. Once I flush, I go wash my hands.
Well, you'll be a changed man if you do.
I know. I need to. Yeah. I need to add more entertainment to my life, Scott.
So what's going to happen is you're going to go back to Australia now.
And
you're,
stare at the
you're actually
going to
pay
bowl.
Attention. And I want to report back.
Zach Wilson.
What about him?
Threw three touchdowns.
What?
This weekend.
Did they win?
I do not believe they did not win. No, yeah. They lost to the Philadelphia Eagles, sadly. But
and Jalen Hurts is
Jalen Hurts didn't play.
Yeah.
You know who played?
Talk to me.
Gardner Minshew.
Did Gardner Minshew play?
Mania is back, Scotty.
That was a good selection by the Eagles then, wasn't it?
It was, and he's still the backup. They've come out and announced that even with the victory, even though Gardner Minshew won, Jalen Hurts is still the number one quarterback. I think Jalen Hurts is a solid QB. You would know better than I, but
you know why they do that, don't you?
I can guess.
Why do you think that they still want Jalen Hurts, even though the other guy's playing better?
Because they want to reassure that his confidence level doesn't plummet.
Nah, it doesn't have anything to do with that. They don't care about your confidence or not. They basically say, when you get to this level, you either have confidence or you don't have it.
So why? Why
we're not
going to
mess with you. It's all about draft order. Like they'll hold guys out. They'll keep it where the team will play as poorly as they possibly can so they get a better draft pick. So who would you want in if you're going to get a better draft pick? The better quarterback? The guy that actually might win? Gardner Minshew mania? No. And that's why you'll see these guys early, like Ryan Fitzpatrick. He'll play and play well for a team, and then they kind of yank him because they don't want to. If they're not going to make the playoffs, then they want to tank to get the best,
and that
the
makes
best
sense.
Possible. Yeah.
Without actually publicly stating that you're tanking.
Jalen Hurts, though, is an interesting study in that when he was at Alabama and I believe they won a national championship and then they go back. And so he's played the whole entire year.
Yeah.
He came in for another guy. In fact, Alabama was playing USC. And he just kind of electrified Alabama, win a national championship, go through into the next season, and they're playing for a national championship again. They're in the last game of the year playing for a national championship, and Jalen Hurts can't throw the ball to save his life. I mean, he's terrible. And so Saban, because they're getting it handed to him, puts in Tua Tagovailoa. They win the national championship.
The next year, Jalen Hurts transfers to Oklahoma.
Yes.
Oklahoma plays Alabama, if I'm not mistaken, in the playoffs. I could be wrong. I don't have it in front of me. But, yeah, it's interesting.
But the point is when I watched it, the reason he got benched was because he was terrible throwing the football, and they had to throw the football to win. And he was a great runner. And so it's been fascinating to watch his evolution because he really actually started to throw the ball halfway decent when he got to Oklahoma. And he got in a system that kind of helped him. And he's kind of evolved in the pros because he was.
You know who his quarterback coach is at Philadelphia?
Brian Johnson.
Yeah.
He was picked kind of to be that Taysom Hill, kind of that hybrid type of player. And I'm not so sure he's evolving into a better thrower than actually Taysom. And I don't know if he'll end up being a great pro or not. I don't know, but he's a guy that's really improved. Like I'm just like this guy. I don't know how he did it, actually, because I was like, this guy will never make the NFL because he's not consistently accurate enough.
Yeah, well, it just goes to show what hard work and a bit of confidence can do to somebody. There's an argument to be made that even though Tua came in for him a couple years ago during that playoff run, Tua ended up throwing the football more successfully. Jalen's the better thrower now in the
right.
NFL.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Yeah,
no, I know.
Have you heard about, speaking of quarterbacks, have you heard about Big Ben?
No. What happened to Big Ben?
Big Ben. So sources, he hasn't, I don't believe he's publicly come out and said this, but sources at ESPN are suggesting that, and this, I guess, isn't that big of a surprise, but he's going to retire at the end. This is it. This is his final hurrah,
man.
If you will.
You know, you get these guys and they... it's a fine line because you go, he probably should have retired by now.
Yeah, I agree.
And but when it's over, and I don't know how this was for you, for me, like, I wanted to just get it out of my system. Like, I didn't want to go, oh, I wish I would have. It's like, just get it all out of your system and move on with your life. Like a Brett Favre who kept coming back and couldn't decide if he wanted to retire and couldn't stop and whatever. It's just like, play as long as you can play. I don't care if you're not even playing at the highest level. Just play until it's done and you're over with it. And you can't do it anymore.
But don't you want to go out on top? That's why there's this like slight narrative that maybe Carl Whittingham's going to retire. We have no idea. I have no insight. Don't come after me. But there's a chance he will retire. And it would make complete and utter sense in my brain if he did either. Retired or came back. If he retires, he goes out on top. There's a chance he's at the apex right now, Scotty. But they have a really good team coming back, or at least that's the thought. And so there's probably a good chance they're a top 10 all preseason pick. And I don't know. Maybe they can go to the college football playoff next year. Maybe there's a better chance they don't, but there's a half decent chance they do.
Did I tell you that Utah's going to the Rose Bowl?
You've mentioned.
Have I mentioned that at all tonight? Yeah. Just in case someone tuned in for just a hot minute, Utah is going to the Rose Bowl, and we're talking about it in the NFL. Look, I wouldn't be surprised if Kyle Whittingham retired. Or Ben Roethlisberger or anyone. Like, it's a very personal choice. I'm just saying there's a window in your life that you can do it. It's not like something you can just keep doing the rest of your life. It's like you got to do it now. And so once you've closed the door, once it's over, boom, it's gone. So whether you're on top or whether you're whatever, it's going to be over. And quite frankly, no one really cares. John Elway goes out on top, right? Wins a Super Bowl. I'm done. I'm out of here. I think within a year, within, 3 weeks, no one said, man, was that just a great move for John Elway? Good job, John Elway, for going out on top. And I know it sounds good. And I know everyone wants to like do it like that. Or Michael Jordan, winning his sixth championship and saying, see you later kind of thing.
But I think it does matter, Scotty, because if you're Ben – like, you'll – in 20 years' time –
what matters?
You'll think about Ben Roethlisberger and you'll go, good player, but you don't think of him at his prime.
Of course I do. I think when you said that, I go, Ben Roethlisberger, Big Ben, played for the Steelers, won a couple of Super Bowls, and was a very good player. That's what I'm going to think about.
But not any part of your
I'm not
going to
sit there and go,
I should have retired a few years and he did.
No, heavens no.
Really?
I mean, Drew Brees should have retired 2 years ago. Easily. I'm not sure he could throw the ball very far at the end of his career. And everyone loves Drew Brees. Like Drew Brees could run for president.
I don't know if he
but,
could.
But his last couple of years.
I don't know if he could. He had that whole,
that's true.
Forgot about the whole. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. He might still be able to. Okay, he could be a senator from, wherever.
The South.
Yeah.
Let's not go down this road.
Certain parts of the South. But the point is people they're not looking at the end. They just hear the name and they'll conjure up some kind of image.
You might be right. I think you're a greedier sort in the sense that you wanted to get as much out of yourself as you possibly could. And I think other people aren't built like that. I think there are other athletes that don't really care about getting the most out of themselves. They want to reach a certain level, and once they've gotten to that, they're okay with it.
Well, Coach Whittingham, he's like, I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm not going to be like Lavelle. I'm not going to be like Coach Mack. And just coach till, I'm dead.
No.
And coach forever.
Yeah.
I believe it's a personal choice. My personal choice and your personal choice about when you were going to retire from a sport or whatever, very different. Now, in my personal life now, I'm not going to, sit around here and do this for the next 25 or 30. I shouldn't say that because I'll be here in 20 years doing this. The minute I said it, I just thought that. There's certainly a mindset of saying,
What else are you going to do? Are you going to go coach?
Oh, I got a whole lot of things I'm going to do.
Have you ever thought about coaching?
I've thought about it a lot. I thought about it when I retired. And I was like, I just knew the commitment to it. And I was like, and I knew that if I committed to it, I would make that commitment. And the commitment is you have no life.
Well, but not in the NFL.
More so in the NFL.
Why? I think it's changed.
The season is forever.
It's longer, yes.
Okay. And you're always doing, like in the off season, there's always something, whether it's player evaluations or you have, No.
You travel once a year, really, outside of the season, and that's for the workouts right before the draft and
days. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, it does add up.
Yeah.
But I think the college game, I think what college coaches do in this world, in this day, I think it's, I've always said to myself, if I decide to go down that road, I'm going to become an NFL coach and I'm not doing the whole college thing. College coaches are, Carl Whittingham won that flippin' Rose Bowl on Friday and he's in Florida on Sunday.
Well, where'd you think he would be?
At home, sipping on whatever it is he sips on.
Eggnog.
There you go.
Yeah. Fat free.
There you go. But like, that's what NFL coaches, I think, do. They celebrate. They enjoy the moment.
None of them do. These guys are wired to, like, they go, no. It's a miserable life. But I'm up for it. I'm up for it. All right, we're going to take another break.
It's a miserable life. I'm up for it.
Well, I am. Well, because I love coaching.
I know. It's just funny that you would say
no,
those
it's,
two
it's,
things.
No, it's
right?
A hard. It's got its challenges.
It's very rewarding, Scotty.
Yeah.
When it goes right.
I know.
And that's the attraction.
1,000%.
Yeah.
All right, this is Unrivaled. It's 97.5, 1280, The Zone. We're going to take a break. We come back. We've got RSL GM Elliot Fall is going to talk to us about, well, you know, an improbable season for RSL.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is Unrivaled. I am Scott Mitchell. He is Tom Hackett, and Tom Hackett is gloating at the moment. Please, please, please explain yourself, Tom.
Well,
he really is. Go ahead.
You guys made me sound like I was such a fool for thinking this way prior to the show starting in prep. When news broke that Mario Cristobal was going to Miami, I said the only reason he's going is because A, maybe he's getting paid more, but his mum's ill and he's from Miami and that it's not a better job than Oregon. You were
he's
it's
restoring
way
the U.
It's a way better job. I'm like, no, it's not. So I put a poll out there and I asked the people online, and I only put the poll up there for an hour. It's got just over 200 votes, and 85.6 officially say Oregon is a better job than Miami.
How many national championships at Oregon?
Doesn't matter, because I'm talking present. You're talking past.
No, there's a tradition. There's a foundation. There's a
foundation from 20 years ago, Scotty. The foundation's deteriorated. They need an upgrade.
No,
they play in Hard Rock Stadium.
And that's a nice stadium.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, what other stadium are you going to play in?
Orton, like your own stadium, Rice Eccles.
Yeah, go to Oregon where it rains all the time. I mean, the only thing about Oregon that's good is the Nike gear. That's it.
They're an annual top 15.
Who
program.
Wants to go to Oregon? Nobody. All you people. I don't care what Tom's poll says. They're wrong.
Let's ask our next guest. He likes college football.
Fine. All right. We'll do that. All right. We have on the line here our guest hotline, of course, Real Salt Lake General Manager Elliot Fall. The guest hotline is sponsored by Smart Rain. Smart Rain state-of-the-art irrigation control helps with first-class water management. Visit smartrain.net to learn how to save 30 to 50% on your commercial property water cost. All right, Elliot, how are you? And welcome to the show.
I'm great, guys. How are you?
Do you follow football at all? I mean,
he does.
American
he does.
Football and Oregon
I
and
do.
Miami.
I do. I follow. I followed a bit. I'm a big Ute fan.
Go Utes! Hey,
right.
Hey, the Utes are going to go to the Rose Bowl. Just wanted to let you know.
You know, I heard that. I think I read it in the newspaper or something.
Yeah, it's probably on the back page somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. No. You know, the truth is, I was actually in Portland. Went out and watched the game while at a bar in Portland where there were plenty of Oregon fans, and I was gloating. So,
I'll bet you had a good time.
I did have a good time. It brought me back to my old days in the Muss. You know, I was a Muss member for both undefeated seasons.
Ah, so. Look at you! Awesome,
yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
All right, how do you get to a conference final without a coach and an owner?
Well. I will say we have a coach. We certainly have a coach. Pablo Mastroianni filled in, though you know, on the interim tag, very admirably, and did a fantastic job of rallying the group and really getting them bought into to fighting for each other and bought into to what they could be. So we do have a coach, but we don't really have an owner, and that is fair. So. How do we do it? You know, I think we did it the way we've had to do it in this organization for a long time, which is, you know, really, really focus on people and focus on, you know, bringing in the right players who were here for the right reasons and were bought into what we wanted to do and what we wanted to be. And really, you know, kind of we're able to start to rebuild the culture like we used to have here in a way that it was conducive to the group, you know, proving some people wrong.
Elliot, you obviously made an announcement this afternoon on roster decisions. I guess I'm most interested in the players you declined options on: Milan Olasky, Douglas Martinez, Ashton Morgan, Justin Putia, Noah Powder, Hazon Ramirez, Tate Schmidt, and Donny Toya. There's a chance now, for those that are unaware, you declined the options, but if you wanted to, you could reopen negotiations and sign them under a new contract. Do you, I guess without going into too much detail, do you anticipate some of those players at least coming back for next year, or is it too early?
Yeah, I would say it's possible. You know, we've done the bulk of our exit meetings. We do a meeting with every player after the season. We've done the bulk of them. We have a couple more to wrap up tomorrow. But you know, we've broached that subject with some of those guys and are certainly open to having conversations. And you know, there's a few dominoes that need to fall. But you know, like you said, it wouldn't shock me if there were, you know, one or two of those guys that were here again next year. And you know, look, I also would like to tip my cap to all of them. They were all incredible professionals this year. They all came in, they all did their job, they all worked hard. You know, it's a tough industry sometimes, and you know, sometimes you have to make some really difficult decisions. And that's what we had to do in a couple cases, but I think they're all gonna have brighter days ahead, and they'll all be successful, whether it's here or somewhere else in the future.
Okay, help me out here for just a second. So you don't have an owner. First of all, where are things with the ownership, and where's that gonna fall? But how do you make all these decisions without having an owner?
Yeah. So you know, we've gotten kind of, I guess, decent at it, in the sense that, you know, we've been operating with the league overseeing our, you know, overseeing us more or less as our de facto owner since the middle of last year. And so we work regularly with representatives from the league office and they give us the autonomy and they give us the authority to make the decisions that we see fit and that we think are the best for the organization in the short term and the long term. So that's what we've done, and that's what we'll continue to do until they call us and tell us, hey, here's the phone number for your new owner, which I'm sure will happen someday, but it hasn't happened yet. So when that day comes, we'll gladly work with them. But until then, you know, we communicate with the league office.
While we're talking about it, for RSL fans that are listening, tomorrow, 9:30 Mountain Time, Don Garber, the MLS commissioner, is addressing in his annual State of the League address. He's expected to talk about RSL ownership, so there'll be more on that tomorrow. Can I dive into the weeds here quickly, Elliot? You've mentioned you're not able to spend discretionary funds without ownership. Albert Rusnak was obviously a designated player. You want to re-sign him. I assume you want to re-sign him as a designated player. Do you have to wait for new ownership to do that, or could you sign him as a designated player tomorrow because he was one this past year without ownership?
I mean, the way it worked last year is the league basically said we weren't allowed to add discretionary spending from the previous year or from contracts that had been agreed to already. They've been very willing to work with us. And obviously Albert had a really good year, and Albert's a fantastic player and our captain and a great leader with our group. So, we are certainly engaged in conversations with him, exactly where that goes. You know, we'll see. We're not quite there, but I'm very optimistic that we'll be able to get him back, and have him here, for the 2022 season and beyond. Exactly what roster designation that is, I mean, it remains to be seen. I mean, but yes, I mean, we will have a conversation with, you know, our de facto owner, the league office, once we have a framework of an agreement in place, to get their approval on it.
Two more quick ones. Can you give the RSL fan base any indication as to when you will sign/hire a manager?
Yeah, you know, it's the most important decision we have to make, quickly. So we are in the middle of having those conversations, and I am hopeful that we will have resolution there very quickly.
I appreciate you. That was very political. Lastly, is Miami or Oregon a better college football job?
Scott, I hate to say it, but I think it's Oregon now. I think it's a more attractive job. Who gets better recruiting classes? These days, I think Oregon does. I mean, I'm not an expert. I might be wrong about that, but that said, Miami is definitely a sleeping giant. All it will take is somebody to go in there and do a really good job, and I'm sure they could be a great program once again. But they've fallen on some hard times.
No, they've fallen off a cliff is actually what they
did. Although two of the last three games, so has Oregon. They've fallen on some hard times as well. So.
Boy, didn't they?
No.
Man, they got it handed to them. Hey, yeah. Utah's going to the Rose Bowl, if you didn't know that.
Yeah, I will certainly be watching it, if not in attendance.
Well, I'm going to be there, so maybe you'll say hi.
There we go. Absolutely. Right.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it, and good luck with everything.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Elliot.
All right, there you have it. That's Elliot Fall, who's the general manager for RSL. That's got to be hard, Tom.
Yeah.
I mean, you got all these important decisions you have to make, and you're kind of like, at the league's beck and call, or but you're also limited as to your
really
choices.
Good.
And,
yeah.
I mean, I don't understand this. Why would it take so long?
Well, there's something called greed.
Yeah.
And the league.
The seven deadly sins, by the way.
The league wanted maybe a little bit more money than they billionaires thought it may be worth.
Ah.
And that subsequently or consequently prolongs everything. So, no, it's tricky. And what Elliot, by the way, what Elliot Fall, and he's a good friend of mine, and I'm biased, so take it with a grain of salt, but what he's been able to accomplish, nothing short of really, really special.
Wait, he's a good friend of yours?
Yeah.
Well, of course he's going to tell everyone that it's the Oregon job.
He has told me on many a time how horribly wrong I am. He would have no issue.
Oh, he would tell you you're wrong.
Yes, yeah, he's a transparent man.
Well, I don't think you're wrong.
I
like your question, quite frankly. I just don't think you're right.
So what am I?
I think, okay.
So what's your reasoning? Give me something serious here.
It's the potential of an opportunity.
But why would you take a job with potential when you have one?
If
that's
Oregon,
it's
like Lincoln Riley, who had a great job, was going to go to the SEC. It's like, why in the world would you leave Oklahoma? Oklahoma is like, I mean, they've had two Heisman Trophy winners recently.
Really good program.
I mean, it's an amazing program. And why would you go? Which is a better job, Oklahoma or USC?
Oklahoma.
See, and I just look at it different because I look at what the job can be if the right person is put into place. That's the way I see it. Because I think the programs are so contingent on having the right guy. Like, not every football coach is created equal. There's good ones and there's bad ones and there's Alabama just wasn't lighting it on fire before Nick Saban got there. And Alabama is a great program, but it was down. And all I'm saying is there are programs. I mean, Texas is down. Texas is a great program. Michigan's been down forever. Yeah, I mean, Michigan's been so overrated for years. So that's just the way I look at it.
I understand your thought. I just think Oregon with Phil Knight.
It's your generation.
It may be.
It's like gratification right now. There's no delayed gratification. It's like I just see it how it is in the present, and I look at it and I see the potential.
To be fair, and Oregon, when you look back on the last decade, they've been in the top 10 most weeks. I have to imagine they've really only had one good quarterback.
How old are you?
Marcus Mariota is the only quarterback that's been
any good.
Any good?
Right. How old
Which
are you?
Which is strange. I'm 29.
Yeah, see. I have you by about 14 years. Like 15 years. Or no, 15?
No, Scotty, I don't want
25
wanna,
years.
Yeah, I don't want to call you out, but you lost your marbles, man.
25 years, Tom.
But what does that mean? It means
I've had life experience for 25 years that you didn't even get yet. That's all I'm saying. I'm older and I have more insurance. It's all you don't even know where that's from, do you?
Oh, you're just going to like make me feel like a fool publicly now?
Well, you wouldn't know cuz it's from a movie, Fried Green Tomatoes. It's a famous line from a movie. Anyways. We're told that we have to go to a break.
It's unfortunate.
All right, when we come back, it is time for the 2-minute drill. This show keeps rolling on.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All righty, sports fans, welcome back. It is Unrivaled on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell and Tom Hackett, who is filling in for Alex Keery, who is on vacation sunning himself so he can, get that pasty white body, which I try not to think about. And I don't know why I keep mentioning this, but I do because I think it's kind of funny. But anyways, you know what's going to happen here is we have the 2-minute drill. This is kind of the segment as we go on. And the 2-minute drill is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar, double chocolate, peanut butter brownie, or salted caramel. 100% real chocolate, 100% real delicious. Order yours today at Built.com and save 10% if you enter Zone at checkout. That's Built Bar. All right, you know what happens in the 2-minute drill, Tom?
I do, Scotty.
All right, well, late in the football game, I'll tell you. You got to go down the field and kick a field goal, score a touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Our show's the same way. Still got a lot to talk about, not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy because everyone gets a trophy today, 2 COVID shots, and a plethora of desserts. Do you like dessert, Tom?
You know, I'm not crazy about desserts.
Oh, good. Then we don't have to talk about it tonight. But if you were to have dessert, what would be your favorite dessert?
Probably a brownie.
A brownie?
Yeah, but not like too dark a chocolate.
Is it like an edible brownie or is it just a brownie brownie?
Right, just regular brownie.
Just a brownie brownie. Do you make good brownies?
I can.
Wife make good
sparingly.
Brownies?
Yeah, we both cook. Yeah. Cookies, we have cookies. Yeah. I just don't love cake. Anyway, enough about that.
All right, so we just kind of throw some things out here and just talk about them real quick, and then, we move on to new things. So Ohio State quarterback Quinn Ewers leaves the program less than a year after he enrolled, and, of course, he was that Texas kid who signed a massive NIL deal.
What is that all about?
What is it all about?
Like, why is he leaving?
It's called take the money and run, baby. I mean, really, what? All right.
No, there's more to it than that.
I don't think so. I think C.J. Stroud. I think he's a redshirt freshman. And it's like, he's not going anywhere. The kid might win the Heisman Trophy. So I think this these kids today are so geared to, they think they're ready to play, and a lot of them are. And if they're not going to play and play early, then they're going to go to the path of least resistance and find a program that will take them in. I mean, there's been so many musical chairs where guys have left and come to a program. I almost think you're better off not recruiting a guy.
What are you talking about?
I seriously do. I mean,
well, you got to pluck him in the transfer
and
portal.
And I just think, yeah, just like it's
hope
like,
he doesn't work out.
If you have like a super need position, right? You're down on cornerbacks. You just go get a dude and say you're going to start as a freshman. And then you leave that position alone and just build depth through the transfer portal. Because these players are just like they're. I mean, the guy, the Peter Castelli at Utah. I mean, he's like, I'm out of here. I'm not playing.
Can I tell you? I think what this is all exposing. I think this is exposing college coaches and false promises made throughout the recruiting process.
They all lie. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. They promise things like playing time or whatever it is that they're promising these days, and then they don't live up to them, and the players are like, well, now I can transfer, and I don't have to be here for 3 years. I can just leave, and so I'm going to leave.
When you leave high school, you're like the dude, right? Like everyone, oh, you're so good, you're so amazing, and that's all you hear. And so these coaches feed into that because that's kind of the place you're at. You're the big fish, and so yeah, they're gonna play into that. They're gonna feed off of that, and the player goes, well, I know I'm really good, so when I come to your program, oh yeah, I'm gonna be the best.
Yeah, but they're told that they're gonna come in and get playing time, and
yeah, I know.
And it's ludicrous. It's just that's all this is. And now they can transfer because they can. The NCAA allowed it. And now it's an absolute mess.
So I think these coaches would just lie more.
No, you do the opposite, Scotty.
Why?
Become transparent and offer support and be like, hey, if you want to come here, you're going to have to work your tail off. No guarantees you're going to start. You're not going to have as many players in the transfer portal.
Can I tell you the transparent programs in America? They're called UConn. Okay? They're not any good. They're not any good.
Look, I believe in moral values, and I stand by that. And maybe that's why I'll never work out in professional sports or collegiate sports, because I hate it. I think it's nonsense.
I think these coaches believe it when they say it, but then they just change their mind later. They're like politicians. They just kind of change their mind when they feel like it. I don't know.
It's crazy to me.
Did you have a coach ever lie to you, Tom?
I was barely recruited, Scotty. Like, barely.
I know, but like when you got to a program, did you have a coach tell you things that maybe didn't work out the way you said they were?
They said to me, as a walk-on freshman, if you have a good season, we'll reward you with a scholarship the next year.
Yeah.
Next spring. And then you know what happened?
Didn't happen.
I got a 1.8 GPA because I didn't go to class, and they said, you're not getting your scholarship, big boy. And I said, rightio. So then I worked my tail off through spring and summer, and I got my GPA back up, and I got it come fall. I dug my own grave.
Yeah.
So they didn't lie to me.
Yeah. The Aussie punters now are like, they get a scholarship right off the get-go, right?
Yeah. I got a little excited.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, coming to America and...
I understand.
The college scene. Yeah, it's a hard deal. It's a bit much for me to handle at the time.
Well, Tom, we got to take another break here. When we come back, you know what we're going to talk about?
What's that?
Well, I think Utah's going to the Rose Bowl.
Jeez, you haven't said that
We
before,
may
Scotty.
Be talking about that again. It is Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell. He's Tom Hackett. We'll be back in a flash.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Is that show, right?
On 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's, not KSL, that's the old station. They just, you know, those old habits die hard. It's Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Scott Mitchell, and I'm here with Tom Hackett from KSLSports.com. of course, former Ute great. And Tom, we're wrapping up the end of the show here. This is the end. Again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
In respect to you and you being the guest, I'm going to let you kind of, whatever you want to talk about at the end of the show, that's what we're going to talk about.
Well, I want to talk about the Heisman finalists that were announced. And the only reason I want to talk about this is because there's one player that will soon become very familiar with sporting fans around this area. So Aiden Hutchinson, who's now apparently the projected number one overall pick, is a DM from Michigan. He had like 15 quarterback hurries against Ohio State.
He was a beast.
He was really good. He could be. Kenny Pickett, the quarterback from Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Young, obviously, the quarterback from Alabama. And C.J. Stroud, the quarterback from the Ohio State University, is a finalist for. So if Utah's going to win the Rose Bowl, and it's a big if, I think, anyway, they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to prove themselves. They'll earn this Rose Bowl victory.
But how are you like Utah's like the sixth best team in the country? And where's Ohio State then?
They're going to be right up there. So here's what scares me. And I think Utah wins if they control the time of possession and the trenches.
Okay.
Specifically
on
offense.
We always win if you control.
Specifically on offense.
Okay.
Utah does not win if this turns into a track meet. And here's why. There's a good argument to be made. One, their quarterback's a Heisman finalist, which means he's elite. Yeah. Two.
Or popular.
Or both. Two, in my opinion, they have the best wide receiving corps in all of the country.
Yeah.
Like, they're really,
it's kind
really
of USC
good.
On steroids is what it is. Yeah.
And if it gets into a track meet, I don't think, and I say this with all due respect, but Clark Phillips is great. He's a little undersized. And then you've
got, you know, he was recruited to Ohio State.
I know.
State
I think he decommitted. Yeah. And then you've got what's his name on the other side?
Zamaya Vaughn.
There you go. Who's a true freshman.
Yeah.
That petrifies me if I'm a Utah
I wonder
fan.
If there's some guys that are unhealthy right now that Utah, like Fabian Marks, are they going to get him back? Or
there's a good chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the game's not until, you know, it's.
Gen first.
Yeah. There's.
But don't you agree?
We're about 3 weeks away. No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
Like the matchup, offensively and defensively, probably not the best for Utah because of the secondary. So it's really sketchy as far as that goes. But I think Utah's defense matches up very well with Ohio Utah's offense matches up with Ohio State's defense.
Yeah.
I think they can score points.
I do too.
Yeah, it'll be fun. All right, we got to go, folks. That's the end of the show. Thank you, Tom. Thanks to everyone out there. This is Unrivaled on 97.5, 1280 The Zone. Have a good night. We'll catch you all tomorrow.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.